Blog Talk Radio.
Enjoyed it since Michael Jordan retired. The Olympics has been incredible. I've enjoyed that too. I don't know what happened to our sprinters though, man. U.S. don't have no sprinters anymore. I don't get it. But with all that said, we are 4 weeks away from the first game of the NFL season, Wednesday, September 5th. The Dallas Cowboys will go visit the New York Giants. Can you think of a better game to start with? Can you? I can't think of one. I'm a little biased, but I can't think of one. That's it. That's the game. You know, the last game of last season and all of that was on the line last year, and now we're going to start off with the Cowboys going to visit. Gotta say it, the Super Bowl champion New York Giants. We're going to talk about those Cowboys. We're going to talk about your team. We're going to talk about a lot of things because we haven't been on in a while. But as everybody knows, I don't do this by myself. I can't do this by myself. It just wouldn't be the same. It's like, you know, when you have football, you have a team, right? You know, this isn't golf. This is football. You have a team, right? I'm one member of this team. But I'm going to introduce the other two members. The next guy I'm going to introduce comes from the world of Madden. We are the Madden voice, right? So, you know, I mean, you know, we wouldn't be right to be called the Madden voice if we didn't have someone from the world of Madden NFL football video games, place that I spent some time in. But this guy is a diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and he is one of the best Madden players in the world. Now, you know, at some point tonight, man, maybe he can give us a little sneak peek on the new upcoming Madden game, let us know what his thoughts are, maybe talk about what's been going on in the tournament scene. But tonight, right now, we're going to introduce my co-host, and we all know him as K-Star. K-Star, welcome to the Madden Voice.
Glad to be back, Mr. T, Commissioner T. It is almost that time, man. That first preseason game already dropped. They already gave us the blue balls. We are ready for that football.
Yeah. Yes, we are. We are ready. And I must bring on our other co-host. I usually introduce him first, but this time I had to introduce him last. Because this is the first time that we introduce him with his new title. It's not Stop the Train anymore. No. It's not MM3. No. We introduce him. We can't even no longer just call him the first winner of EAFL Super Bowl I. Even that prestigious title pales in comparison to what he has earned and obtained. We are honored and blessed and pleased to have newly appointed, recently graduated, Dr. Train is with us on the Madden Voice.
What up, T? What up, K-Star? Are y'all ready for some football?
That's for you, Train.
Yeah.
We gotta give you one more. Wait a minute, hold on.
Holy cow!
And one more.
It was that loud.
and one more. My favorite.
Can you dig it?
There you go.
Yo, why you say, hey, it was actually that loud, see? It was dead loud when my name got called, man.
Well, you know, I actually, unfortunately, I couldn't make it out. I appreciate the invite, and I really, really wanted to go. It was a conflict and some family plans, so I couldn't make it. But I did get to see that video that you put on Facebook that one of your family or friends did. And
yeah,
yes.
My sister put it up there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. And as your name was called, I mean, yeah. it was something, man. It was definitely like loud when your name was called, man. I'm glad you had that much love and support on your very special day.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. But now, you know, accolades aside, it's time to get into some football, gentlemen. First thing I want to get into, man, I really want to get into, we haven't had an opportunity to really talk about it, and every time you think the story is done, something else happens. And certainly any NFL football fan, if you haven't heard about Bounty Gate, you know, then I don't know, then you must not be watching, you know, any of the sports shows. But and I don't necessarily want to rehash all of the old news, but – you know, recently, obviously, there was some suspensions handed out, and, you know, Jonathan Vilma was suspended for the year, and along with, you know, Sean Payton suspended for the year. And in the last week, you know, there's been some interesting things. Drew Brees had some very strong comments about Roger Goodell. He then kind of backtracked a little bit off of his comments. It kind of irritated me. But more interesting than that is apparently – Jonathan Vilma has threatened to sue, or is filing suit against the NFL for defamation of character. And the NFL has come back and said, if you drop your lawsuit, we will cut your suspension to 8 games. That was mind-boggling to me. And because this is the first show in a long time, I'm just going to go ahead and go first, and I'm going to say, if I'm Vilma, hell no. You know, I mean, if I'm Vilma and they're willing to cut my suspension in half at the threat of a lawsuit, that tells me something. That tells me that maybe there isn't a smoking gun, as he's been saying. Maybe it's circumstantial evidence. You know, I did not for a second believe him. I didn't. I said, you're guilty and you know it and shut your mouth. But now I'm coming around to the other side, and I'm thinking, you know what? Just like that, a threat of a lawsuit. I mean, it ain't like the NFL, $9 billion annual, you know, revenues. It ain't like they can't defend themselves. It ain't like they don't have the money and the lawyers to defend themselves. So to me, someone in that corporate, in that office in New York is saying, tell you what, let's throw them a bone. Let's save some bad press. You know, maybe we don't have what we think we have. And let's see if he'll take 8 games. If I'm Jonathan Vilma, I say no. I want to play. You either reinstate me fully or I'm taking you to court. What do you guys thought? K-Star, what do you think?
If I'm Vilma, this is a monster. To me, this is a massive success already. Again, the commissioner, if the report's true, it's even budge. Because this man thought he was suspended all year. If anything to me, we all thought from the jump this was just desperation. So I don't think Vilma should get cocky. If that's really something that's out there, you should absolutely take that deal and be thankful because, look, for a while we thought he was done for the whole year. He thought he was done. We thought the losses were frivolous and just him, you know, just kind of getting at Roger Goodell to try and make him feel bad. But the fact of the matter is, if it really does get reduced, how does he not take it? Because if he plays his hand too strong, then he has a chance of losing even that initial deal, which may or may not be true again. And if it is true, then he has to take it. Because, again, if he overplays his hand, then not only will he get in a whole legal beef, which, again, he might have a chance to win, but it won't. Just because if he wins that defamation kicker lawsuit doesn't mean he'll come back and play. That's not part of the terms at all. I mean, if he really wants to be about this football team and really prove that he didn't do it, he should just, again, I still think take that little reduced suspension, because if he has acknowledged at all that he had any part in it, I think that's just disingenuous. So, again, if I'm John Saville, I'm not going to overplay my hand. As soon as Commissioner Goodell offered me a settlement to get my suspension reduced from 16 to 8, or even 16 to 12, I'm in. You have to. Otherwise, you may get too cocky and may possibly lose it all.
Train, thoughts?
I like the points you made, T, with that the fact that the NFL decided to give him a deal makes it seem like there's maybe a little bit of truth to what Dylan may be saying, that they don't have the evidence that they've been claiming they've been having, because as NFL fans, we haven't seen anything outside of, you know, the one video that we heard of, what's the coach that they suspended for a year, the coordinator, Williams. We haven't seen anything outside of that video. But we don't know what other evidence that they have on the team to hand out these suspensions. And Bilma has been strong for quite some time at saying, you don't have the evidence to give me a whole year suspension from football. Now, at the same time, you know, you just went from 16 to 8 games, so halfway through the season, now you're back in the football. So my thing is, exactly what is Vilma trying to get? Because there's a possibility that if he does play his hand strong, like K-Star said, he still could end up missing the whole season. It could end up getting dragged out in court, and he could end up missing more than the 8 games. So, I don't know, it's kind of a toss-up. You know, on one end, I'm just like, dude, really, just take the 8 games. On the other end, I really want to know, what does the NFL have in order to suspend those players, especially him, for a whole year? Because according to what the evidence we have gotten up to now, he was one of the main ringleaders for doing this from the player's position.
Well, you know, and in fairness, I do want to also add that, and I don't buy it, the NFL has denied offering a settlement. They've denied it, and I'm going to quote Greg Aiello, who is the league spokesman. Today's report about a settlement offer by the league to Jonathan Vilma is completely inaccurate. No such settlement offer has been made. We will continue to respect the court proceedings on this matter and have no further comment at this time. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think there's a settlement out there. And actually, if you read further, there seems to be other discussions on reduced suspension of Will Smith, Anthony Hargrove, and Scott Fujita. So I think that people are starting to push this a little bit and realizing that maybe, I mean, we heard the audio tape of Greg Williams, and to me that's indisputable what he did, and Sean Payton as head coach, and the other general manager, can't remember his name. I mean, that's your staff. So you gotta fall on the sword and then take it for the team. But to me, there's a bigger issue than whether the guy plays 8 or 16 games. If I'm innocent, I'm fighting. I'm not taking a settlement. If I didn't do this, is my reputation. Okay, I'm in the prime of my career. And, you know, not only do I have to think about the rest of my NFL career, I have to think about post-NFL. What am I doing in 5, 6, 7 years when I leave the NFL? You know, if I want to go work for one of the major sports networks, if I want to be a head coach or, you know, somebody's staff, and I have this hanging over my head, you know, I got to think about the livelihood of my career, and reputation is going to carry you a lot farther than stats. So I could give, you know, these guys are making, you know, $8 million a year or whatever they're making. Okay, so I miss a year. I just, you know, I played NFL football for 7 years. I got $40 million in the bank. Yeah, I'll give up a year to prove to you that I'm right, to prove to you that you don't have a smoking gun, to prove to you that you are, that I'm guilty by association. So if Vilma is believes that he's true, then he's doing exactly what I would do. That's all I'm saying. He's doing what I would do, which is I'm fighting because this is my name, this is my reputation. And that's bottom line. And that means more to me than anything these guys are going to say, you know, I'm going to offer you a settlement. You can come back and play 8 games. To me, you played yourself. You know, it's like being in a relationship with a young lady, right? A young lady tells you to go kick rocks. 10 minutes later, she calls you. What are you sitting there saying? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I know you probably got some female listeners out there. You know, I'm just joking. Don't go take that out on your man. It's just Commissioner T being funny. Being funny. But anyway, but let's move on. Let's move on. My favorite player, my personal favorite player, has found a home. My favorite NFL player has now found a home. And as I listened to some of the pundits, I was very surprised that people gave him such a hard time. Let me just play this for you.
Tony, you guys can point the finger at him. You can talk about the vacation. And if you do that, it's really unfair. It's really unfair. It's my team. It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair. We lost to the team. We lost to the team, man.
It could be real frustrating if it's 8 minute drives, 10 minute drives, and then trying to turn around and get a 46 minute drive. That's gotta be hard to take too, right?
This loss hurts.
All right, that's enough. Why wouldn't you want that guy on your team? The famous T.O. crying for Tony Romo. Okay, maybe not. But, guys, explain to me why people don't want this guy on that. Why does he get – I don't understand. He was reportedly – let me just build a case, and then one of y'all try to tell me I'm wrong. But help me understand this. He is arguably – all time – I don't think you can deny he's a top five wide receiver, okay? If you want to deny it, look at his numbers, okay? Because that's what wide receivers are there to do. We're not talking quarterbacks. We're not talking head coaches. We're talking a wide receiver. They are there to put up numbers, okay? And so when you look at most of his statistics, he's top five. The only two wide receivers that are in that conversation, of course, the great Jerry Rice and Randy Moss. After those two, it's T.O. And in some cases, he's ahead of Randy Moss. So the numbers are there. He reportedly ran a sub 4.5 40 at 38 years old. 4.45 40 at 38 years old. He is a freak of nature athletically. And his last two homes, Buffalo and Cincinnati, he was a model player. So why not for $1 million? That's what he's getting paid. Why not bring him in? I don't understand. Why not bring him in? Give him a look-see. Let's see what the guy's got. Why not? Bill Walsh was quoted back in the great Bill Walsh, San Francisco 49er head coach, became their general manager for a little while, 4 Super Bowls, said that T.O. was one of the smartest football players he'd ever been around. Why do you not bring in this veteran and give him a chance when he has shown for the last 3 years that he's not the same guy that was in San Francisco, personality, attitude-wise, Philadelphia, or even his last days in Dallas? Train, give me some thoughts, man. Am I wrong here?
Man, honestly, not so much that you're right or wrong. I just think it's hard for him to shake his past, man. It's been very hard for T.O. to just shake the past and the comments that he's made when he's been with different. It's true enough. Once he got to Dallas and started moving forward, we haven't seen the craziness from him. You know, not so much, but you know, I think people are really looking back to San Francisco and Philadelphia and not what he did in Dallas or maybe a little bit what he did in Dallas because that whole thing, I mean, you know, you're way more knowledgeable about the stuff that went on with Dallas because you follow them more closely. But it would seem like it was a whole lot of he said, she said in Dallas. You don't even know who was the fault of him actually leaving. But, you know, he had his mouth shut in Cincinnati. You know, and played well. no one looked at him after that. And even in Buffalo, had his mouth shut. But I think it's just difficult for T.O. to shake the past, you know, that followed him from San Francisco to Philadelphia to Dallas.
K-Star, if you're a general manager and you need a wide receiver, do you give T.O. a chance? Do you give him a chance? I'm not saying you commit. This is training camp preseason. If he can't make the team, you cut him, okay? I'm not saying the guy gets a pass. But K-Star, do you give him a chance?
Well, it depends the GM of what team I'm on, but we'll just say it's a commonplace GM. You know, all players aside, the roster not set. I would think why not, because he's going to come to veteran minimum. It's going to be a one-year deal. And, you know, at this point, you would have to assume that he has, you know, nothing to lose. I mean, because the fact of the matter is he's going to have to play extremely tough to make the team. He's going to have to be in his best behavior because this is his last chance. Like, this is a B-rabbit from 8 Mile situation. He has one opportunity, and he better not blow it. Because if he does, he's broke. His financial situation is completely unstable, and he needs the money first and foremost. Money will make someone change real quick and act right real quick. And again, with T.O., I mean, he's a freak of nature. At 38 years old, running in a sub-5, a sub-4.45, it's pretty impressive. And again, he is one of the best receivers of all time. However, I do caution that there's a reason why teams haven't signed him the last couple of years. We know what happened in Buffalo. We don't have him in Cincinnati. You know, we didn't hear anything in the media, but I'm pretty sure that teams, the open workouts that T.O. did host for himself, I'm pretty sure coaches did speak to Buffalo and Cincinnati coaches. But, I mean, at this point, you have to give him a chance because he's going to improve your wide receiver corps. You know they're instantly the better. And Van Zandt's a one-year deal. Like, you're not committing to anything crazy. He might not even make the team, but I think we all can agree T.O.'s going to make the team. At least I have no doubt about that. But, again, a great player. I would give him a chance just considering that. Only considering the raw circumstances in which he's faced, where he kind of has no choice. It's kind of like he's kind of like in a Pro Bowl meeting, and this is like him going to jail if he doesn't make this cut because he's going to be broke. And financially, he will be in jail. He owes debts everywhere. So he has to do it. He has to be his best behavior. I think he will be for this season. So why not?
You know, and here's the thing. When you say he should make the team, when you look at who they have, they've got Golden Tate, who certainly isn't a bad receiver. He's consistent. Sidney Rice. I think Sidney, you know, he's had some injuries. You know, if he's healthy, he's very dangerous. I don't know how consistent he's been, but certainly a very dangerous receiver. Doug Baldwin, I don't even know this guy, but he was their leading receiver last year. So you know, if you go and read up on the Seahawks, those three guys are probably their top three receivers. And then they have three other guys. One of them, it sounds familiar for me because I think he used to play for Dallas on a practice squad. But anyway, it doesn't matter because I don't know any of these three guys. So I'm going to just assume those guys are kind of like special teams, you know, fifth, sixth receivers. And then they have T.O. and Braylon Edwards. So, I mean, you know, unless T.O. shows the old attitude or just, you know, can't run anymore, which apparently is not the case, he should make this team. And I will say this. I pray to God that he plays well and can, you know, be in the NFL for a couple of more years, this year, maybe next year, and maybe even pick up a little endorsement deal or something and really, you know, fix his life, really try to, you know, get his life back on track and then maybe propel these next couple of years into some very exciting things also. I know he's trying to act and that kind of stuff. If that's the route, so be it. Or whatever it is, I sincerely hope that he can get his act together because some of the stuff we've seen in the last 6 months, the Dr. Phil interview and all of that, you know, the ending of his the T.O. show and all, it was sad for a guy who's accomplished so much. So I really do I do wish him the best. I really do. I want to go back to the Saints for a second. You know, you guys probably heard Drew Brees And he had some very negative comments about Roger Goodell, and pretty much said that, you know, nobody trusts him, among other things. Then he came back and said that the comments were blown out of proportion. Now, I don't know, Train, if you followed the story or not, do you think Breeze kind of played himself by coming back and softening his stance, or should he have stood by what he said, or should he not have said anything in the first place?
Well, I didn't get a chance to catch Breeze's comment. He got a lot of family in town, so I've been hard up trying to catch it, and I know he had an interview. But just to speak on it in general, I take it from this standpoint. One thing, if you're going to make the comments, then go ahead and stand by. And if you're not going to stand by what you said and mean what you say, it's all season, I'm about to get a fine. Yeah, you should be okay. Then just don't make them. Now, I did catch a radio interview of what Urlacher had to say about the commissioner. And they asked him about the fines and the punishment that was handed out and how the commissioner goes about doing things. And he said, basically, you know, it's written up in the CBA. If the players didn't want things to go down the way that it's going down now, then it should have been written up different in the CBA. You can't do anything about it now. But they were saying the whole thing about Vilma's appeal is that it's been heard by the person who gave him the punishment. That doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person that gave him the punishment, why would he think, I gave you the punishment? Why would I listen to your appeal? So, but that's written up in the CBA. If the players wanted something different, they should have had a little bit more foresight to say, okay, if we have an appeal, maybe we need to have an outside committee that takes a look so you can have a bit of a check and balance. But you don't have a check and balance on Goodell, so you got to take what he did.
Yeah, K-Star, any thoughts on this story? K-Star?
Uh-oh, did we lose him?
I don't know. K-Star? K-Star? All right. I think my opinion on it is very simple. Don't say it in the first place. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand. I mean, you got your $100 million contract. You got $60 million guaranteed. It's the most money ever guaranteed in NFL. And I think he's worth every penny. I think he deserves every penny. Mm-hmm. He's my starting quarterback in both my fantasy leagues, and he's my keeper, in both my leagues. So I think he's worth every penny. He took me to the money in one team last year and took me to the game, and I fell short of getting the money the other one. So, I mean, he's a Super Bowl winner. He's a great humanitarian. Does a lot in New Orleans. And I was disgusted at how long it took New Orleans to come through. But when they did, I said, okay, yeah, I'm shutting my mouth now. That said, you are now dogging the commissioner of the league that approved your contract of $100 million. I don't get it. I don't get it. There's a time and a place for everything. And the collective bargaining agreement is over now. All that stuff's done. And now it's just time to play some football. And, yes, I get it. Your team got slammed. What are you going to do? You know, to me, your focus needs to not be on Goodell. It needs to be on figuring out whether this team is going to compete this year or not, because your head coach isn't going to be there. Your defensive coordinator isn't going to be there. Your general manager isn't going to be there. And you weren't even there for a while, not rightfully so, but you weren't. So to me, don't be doing interviews about Roger Goodell and all of that. You know, that save that for the Players Association. Let them talk about that when the time is right. You've negotiated a collective bargaining agreement. It's done. You negotiated your $100 million contract. It's done. Who cares now? Don't let Peter King from SI, sucker you in and rook you in and make you look like a bad guy. Don't do it. What's the point? At this point, what are you going to prove? Except having to come back 2 days later and say, oops, didn't mean it. You shouldn't have said it in the first place. Love you, Drew. You put a few dollars in my pocket. I think you're an excellent quarterback, and I think you get a bad rap when compared to Brady the Packers.
Rodgers.
I think you get a bad rap when compared to these guys. I think you're right on that level with them. But on this one, I got to say, man, you should have just put out one of those Tim Tebow politically correct, boring-ass comments and moved on. Don't incite a riot. Because now
I'm back, by the way. I was fine. I muted myself. Yeah, real quick, I just want to touch on that. Yeah, Drew Brees, you know, again, as you said, a great football player, but he should – it sounded like to me he felt like almost obligated to speak out because of the whole thing that happened to the Saints. So he has to stand firm because those are his guys. And I think he's more or less just trying – you know, he's been a leader of that team for a long time. I think he's just trying to really just hammer that home that, you know, he's the leader of the Saints. Sean Payton isn't here. So, you know, we can be the Outlaws this year. That's probably going to be their motivation. So I feel like that's just part of Drew Brees using that as leverage for his own team to try to get them motivated for the season and try to kind of just cement his role as the face of the Saints right now. And honestly, the face of the Saints is over the black guy. And it looks like he wants to swing back a little bit, which, I mean, it's fine. But I think he's only doing it just to be politically correct with his own teammates, not necessarily the rest of the league. But that's all I just see as a New Orleans Saints type situation.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree that the motivation of really trying to – because you are the man, okay? You are the man. That's your team, and you are the man. So I don't disagree that you need to step up and take over that team. I don't disagree. I don't think that's the way to do it, though. I don't think that's the way to do it. You can say anything about not agreeing, which he's already said. Hey, I backed Vilma. I backed these guys. I didn't know anything about it. I don't understand. That's fine. But when you take it to the next level – and pretty much calling out the guy, calling out Goodell like that, I just don't see the point in that at this time, right now. You got bigger fish to fry in New Orleans. Your team is in trouble. You're in trouble. Now, you done got your money. You know, you going to the bank. Congratulations. But your team is in trouble, okay? And I unlike a lot of people who think that, you know, they're going to be just as good as last year, I don't. Now, we're going to do a separate show on predictions, but I'll just say I don't think they're going to be just as good as last year at all, not even close. But we'll talk about that another time. let's take a few minutes. One of you guys suggested it. I think it was K-Star who suggested to kind of touch on Mark Sanchez, Tim Tebow, and that whole story. When do you guys want to – I don't even want to start this topic. When do you guys want – I don't care who.
Hey,
want to talk about it.
K-Star started it, so that K-Star is coming on.
Well, like it or not, I clearly you guys don't like it, story. The Tim Tebow hype, I feel like this is foreshadowing of just like a story in which Sanchez, like he's just set up for failure. And I've believe that, you know, everyone's ready to hoist Tebow on their shoulders, and that's what it's looking like. With the hype surrounding the camp, every little thing that goes on there, it's been insane. And, I mean, like I said, like it or not, the story of Tim Tebow is very real because as we hear the roars for Tim Tebow in New York camp and the fans and everything and the media suffocating us, and we're tired of hearing it, how do you think Mark Sanchez feels? So he's going to have to react in one or two ways. One is going to be very positive, two is going to be very negative. I don't know if we've seen enough positive at this point in his career to assume that he's going to all of a sudden conquer the pressure, because let's be real, Rex Ryan's put a lot of pressure on him for a couple of years now, and if he hasn't been able to live up to it this far, what makes you think that he'll thrive and Tim Tebow won't take over the reins? And honestly, they're using Tim Tebow a lot from what I've been hearing now, training camp. There's a lot of training camp coverage this year. NFL Network shouts out to them, of course. People are thirsty for football, but the Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez thing, it's very hot, very real. There's a controversy already. It may not be, you know, from the coaches. It may not be coming from management. But the fact of the matter is it's there. It's real. They feel every day when they walk through there and they have to answer every single question about Tim Tebow. So will Mark Sanchez be able to fend off Tebow? I just don't see how possibly he can do it. I just don't see it.
But Please, Trent, help me here. I'm kind of tired of the story because I don't think it should be seen any more than, hey, Sanchez, your time is running out to be that leader, that quarterback that takes it to the next level for the Jets, and oh, we're going to bring in a quarterback to kind of push you. Yeah, Tim Tebow is not your typical NFL quarterback. He can't throw the ball well. Maybe he will get better. I don't know. What I am tired of hearing is how nice he is. I don't care about that. This is the NFL. It's a bunch of nice guys that don't get publicity in the NFL like that. I want to see what he does when it's time to get on the field. And if he can get better at throwing the ball, then maybe he could be a dangerous quarterback. And until I see that, I'm tired of hearing about Tim Tebow and all this war against Sanchez. Right now, Sanchez is the one that can throw the ball. Sanchez is the one that can step back.
Is he the guy that can throw the ball?
We don't know.
Can Sanchez really spin it? Can Sanchez really spin it as well as you say he can spin it out there? Because
Sanchez can throw the ball better than Tim Tebow, period. Okay? That's just bottom line. That shouldn't even be a question. That's my whole point.
I mean, he can throw it better. Who is he? He can throw it better, but is he really that successful?
Right now, Sanchez is the starting quarterback. He's the one that can throw the ball. He's the one they're going to ride with. Tim Tebow is the backup. He's going to push. If Sanchez can't win games for them, then they'll turn to Tim Tebow, and hopefully he can throw the ball and do more than just run, because he's going to be able to do more than just drop back and then try to run over people with the ball. Now, he's got to be more than a running back at the quarterback position. He's going to have to be a quarterback. But I'm just tired of hearing about, oh, how nice this guy is and how genuine he is. Who cares? I care about football when it's time to talk about football, not how genuinely nice this guy is.
I'm just going to say this, guys. Now, listen, we all watch NFL Network. We all watch ESPN. We all watch a lot of the shows. One of the most popular shows I'm not even going to run from, and I'm not even going to fake the funk, is First Take. Everybody watches First Take, and we love First Take, okay? And I'm not even going to hate on First Take. I think Stephen A. Smith is First Take God, okay? And I've had people compare me to him, including one of my co-hosts. But other people have done it too, and I appreciate it because I admire the guy, because I look up to him, even though we're the same age. I look up to Stephen A. Smith, but I don't pattern myself after him. I just respect what he does. I am Commissioner T. I am not Stephen A. Smith. I don't have 20 years in the business as a sports writer, and I'm not even going to try to act like him. I'm going to be me. And I even got more respect for Skip Bayless than I used to have. I really do. So forgive me if for a minute I sound like one of them, because I might, and I'm going to apologize in advance, because I don't want anybody to hate on me and think that I'm biting off of somebody else, but I'm really not trying. This is how I feel. Okay, and if anybody knows me and has listened to the Madden Boys for the 6 years that we've been on the air, the one thing you know about Commissioner T is I will tell you how I feel. I'm going to just say this. The guy's a backup quarterback. He was signed by the Jets. The number one reason was to put seats in the stadium. Because they know that this guy is going to sell tickets, because he is a media hound, not meaning him personally, the name and what he brings. So when they said, we're going to go get Tim Tebow, the number one reason was money. That's it. That's why they went to get him. Now, I don't disagree that Mark Sanchez has not played to the level that we thought he would play coming out of USC. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree that they didn't need to go out and get a backup to push Mark Sanchez. I don't disagree with that either. And I don't disagree with the fact that Tim Tebow did win 8 games, did take the Broncos to the playoffs, and upset K-Star's very own Steelers. I said upset K-Star's very own Steelers.
All right. Obviously, Steelers are going to win this game. They're on defense, total yards and scoring, playing one of the most anemic offenses in all of football. The ankle for Big Ben is a lot better than what it was against San Francisco, which is definitely good news. But while we lost Mendon Hall, you know, again, Mike Wallace and Antonio Brown, two prolific receivers for us, I just don't see how, you know, Tim Tebow and the Broncos can match us point for point at Mile High. Again, that offense is just horrendous to begin with, and they're playing against number one defense in the league. Troy Polamalu, James Harris, Lamar Woodley, they're calling for you, Tim Tebow. I love you, but not this Sunday. Not this Sunday.
Now, I played that, not to throw it in K-Star's face again, believe it or not. I played it because it's your fault, K-Star. It's your fault. This all is Tim Tebow talk. It's your fault. Why? Because your team, number one ranked defense in the NFL, much better team than the Broncos. Should have annihilated them boys and didn't do it.
You're right.
Didn't do it. It's your fault.
You're right.
All of this
You're
offseason
right.
hype is the Pittsburgh Steelers' fault. If the Steelers had did their job, Tim Tebow, he might be a backup somewhere because they certainly wasn't going to keep him there with Peyton Manning coming in. But he wouldn't be taking limos to news conferences. Went back accordingly to the news conference. All the endorsements and, they interviewing Mark Sanchez and they call him Tim. And none of that would have happened. It just would have been like, where's Tebow at now? Oh, he's over there in Seattle. Oh, good luck to him. All right, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But your team made this happen, man. They made this happen. Now we have to sit here for the next 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks and wait for the inevitable. Because you and I both know, all y'all, everybody listening knows, you two sitting there knows, that unless Sanchez goes in there and plays like Tom Brady, plays like Drew Brees, plays like Aaron Rodgers, plays like Peyton Manning of old, it is a matter of time. Tim Tebow's coming in. You know it. I know it. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
I hate
it.
I don't like it.
Can I just say nothing? Do y'all ever, check out the interviews when they ask him a football question and he just goes, immediately away from football and just talks about how him and someone else is like, oh, we're getting along right well. We don't care. I'm annoyed, man.
Well, let me just add one more thing, and then I'll turn the floor over. But I wanna co-sign one thing, but I wanna take it to another level. That you said, Train, is what I'm tired of. I'm not so much tired about how nice he is. I'm tired of that too. But I'm more tired of the whole. And I think we said this last year. I'm gonna say it again. I am more tired of the constant references as to how he honors God. I'm sorry. I don't care. I don't watch football to watch him honor God. I mean, you want a Tebow and get down and kneel? That's your business. I don't care. But I don't want to hear the commentators talk about how much he celebrates his God as if he's better than every other NFL player who doesn't wear it on his team. I'm tired of it. I watch football to see competition. I don't mind an occasional human interest story. I don't mind when they say, look at what Drew Brees did in New Orleans, or this guy did a Make-A-Wish thing. I don't mind an occasional human interest story. That's fine. But every time the camera's on this guy, we got to hear about how he's this and that and saving people and all. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. And Dr. Train said, and like Stephen A. Smith continues to say, and I'm going to quote him, he can't throw the ball. He's a quarterback, and he can't throw the ball. When he can throw passes consistently, I don't want to hear about the Wildcat. I don't want to hear about going for two after. I don't care. I want to hear about him going 18 for 27 with three touchdowns, one interception, 310 yards per game, and winning more than he's losing, like we expect from every other NFL quarterback out there.
Interjection. First of all, that's addressed a few things. No one brought up the whole Jesus talk except for you guys, so you guys wasted my time and yours by doing it. You guys fell into the trap, that is. No one brought that up. I was talking about football and the media hype. But the media hype, the media football hype, you guys just got trolled. No, you guys just fell into it. You guys just fall on our fault, making us fall deeper into Pandora's. We didn't have to do it. We didn't have to talk about Jesus. We didn't have to talk about his personal stuff. We're talking about football here, are we not?
I'm sick and tired of hearing other people say they're sick and tired of it
because we still have to keep hearing the same thing except how you're sick and tired of it. I don't want to hear it either, but I'm not going to sit here and complain about it.
All right, so I'm sorry. So when we turn on and watch coverage of this guy tomorrow, okay, you mean to tell me that we're going to go the whole day and no one's going to mention his affection for Jesus? Is that what you're telling me?
What I'm telling you is when I watch the NFL Network, the only person who will bring that up during coverage is Tim Tebow. Now, for the other people who do it, that's on them. But it doesn't mean just because Tim Tebow talks or not even sports media, but well, I don't know, Fox News, CNN, whoever wants to cover Tim Tebow because he's more than just a sports player at this point. That's entirely on them. But we don't have to talk about it. I'll just come off Tim Tebow in the football terms. The man got brought in with a private jet, okay? They didn't trade. Okay, I understand what you're saying. They traded for the hype. But the fact of the matter is,
Obviously, they didn't trade for the hype because we all know he's going to play. So that's a little bit contradicting their team. And for a second part of it, you don't trade for a backup quarterback who's going to be flown in from a private jet. And you're right, who did happen to play against the Pittsburgh Steelers and did beat my own Pittsburgh Steelers the way he did it. Now, we can see the same type of the ball. No, you're moving it right. You're making my points for me. It's fine. That's why it's relevant. I'm sorry?
It's all that. Why didn't they name him starter? Why didn't they just come right out? Rex Ryan scared? Why didn't he just, he's our starter. Sanchez, we're going to release him.
It's the same reason why they didn't initially say they're going to go after Peyton Manning. It's the same reason why the Niners said, we didn't go after Peyton Manning. We don't know that because it's politics. It's politics. It's playing nice with the media because, let's be honest, the media right now are dogs, and they're waiting for the red meat to be thrown at them, the red steak. I mean, it's there. They're waiting for it, and it's going to happen, but they don't want to sit here and shadow their whole camp with Tim Tebow nonsense. And the only reason why, maybe the fact that it has, is because it is Tim Tebow and because how well he did play last year. You're right. He did win a lot more games than he lost last year, which is why they made the playoffs anyway. So that's why it's a relevant topic. Because like I checked, the Jets won the AFC Championship game 2 years in a row up until last year. And they're ground and pound. Are they not? Tim Tebow's a perfect fit for them. He's going to play for them. He's going to do well.
So, Trey, get ready because I'm about to give my first Tebonics of the new part of the season. So Mr. K-Star is sitting there saying to me, I think we just lost Train. Train, call us back. Mr. K-Star is saying here to me that we are the ones hyping the Jesus thing and that he's not hearing anybody else do it, but we're the ones doing it.
Now you're putting words. No, what I'm saying is you guys are making it worse. Because
we're making
you're making it worse.
Right. We're making it worse. So if I go to your Facebook page, will I not see a picture of you at a wedding T-bowing? And we know what T-bowing is. It's him bowing down, honoring God. Will we not see a picture of you at a wedding T-bowing?
That happened.
Okay, so how can you sit there? Hold on, let me bring Train back on. I think we might have lost. Train, are you there? Hold on. Oh, wait. Let me bring Train back on. All right, Train, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, all right. So what my point is, he says we're making it worse by commenting on the fact that I'm tired of all of the Jesus coverage when it comes to and don't get me wrong. I don't have a problem with anybody honoring their God any way they want to honor their God. What I'm tired is every time I turn on the TV, that's one of the things that's being discussed. Just like Train said, he's so nice. I hear that too. The other thing I hear is him honoring his God, and I'm tired of that. And K-Star is saying we're making a big deal about it, but it was such a big deal last year that our co-host was at a wedding T-bowing. That's how much of a big deal it became. It became a fad to get down on one knee,
it's a mime,
put your hand in your palm, and T-bow, which is what he does to respect his God. And it became that big of a deal. But we're making it too big. We're making it a big deal.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to sit here and talk why I T-bow. It was fun. All right. I T-bowed to be part of the whole T-bowing concept. All right. You're right. Yeah. This is me T-bowing. But the only reason I was T-bowing because it was to make fun of the whole, the fact of the matter, the whole T-bowing thing to begin with. It wasn't to T-bow's fun.
Bigger than life. Not his play. Not all of that was talk. But the bigger issue was T-bow. Because of this is what he does to honor his God. And all I'm saying is I don't have a problem with, unlike a lot of people who thought it was inappropriate, I don't care. Pray, Tebow, whatever you want to call it, do it. You score, hold up God and give him all glory. I'm okay with that. I don't care. But I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear all the pundits talking about it all the time. Just like Train doesn't want to hear him being a nice guy all the time. I'm tired of that too. I want to talk about football. That's it. That's all I want to talk about. And I don't disagree with this, though, K-Star. I said the number one reason was money and to put butts in those seats and to sell tickets. But I don't disagree that he might already be the starter. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. And I think it's completely unfair. And I think they're going to find that last year,
You know, it's the same as Kevin Cobb, and we can go down a list of quarterbacks that come in and Flynn and all these guys come in and light it up because no one has any film and no one was prepared. Okay, now the guy's played how many games? Played almost a full season now? Oh, trust me. He's not going to be like he was last year. Oh, trust me on that. He may have some level of impact, but it ain't going to be like last year.
Now, the only thing I want to reiterate in what I said before. Honestly, athletically, I think Tim Tebow is a beast. As he's a very big dude, very tough guy to bring down. If he learns how to throw the ball, which he might not, but if he learns how to throw the ball, dude can actually be dangerous at the quarterback position. But if he doesn't, then maybe he'll be dangerous at some other position other than quarterback. But until I see that, I really don't care about anything else having to deal with Tim Tebow.
I agree with you. I think if he can learn to throw the ball, he has the potential to be on a, as far as ability goes, he's a bigger, faster Steve Young if he can learn to throw the ball. Not now. I don't want to be misquoted. Not now. But if he can throw that ball, he is a bigger, faster Steve Young. That's who I would compare him to. Left-handed, agile, tough, he can move around and can run and but he's got to be able to throw the ball. And until we see that consistently, if I'm Mark Sanchez, honestly, I'm not worried about Tim Tebow. I'm worried about who's not behind me. I'm looking at who's in front of me. And I'm now, with his pedigree, Tebow's got strong pedigree, but so does Sanchez. Sanchez is no slouch. And now it's time for Mark Sanchez to show and prove. I'm not a huge Sanchez fan, so I really can't support him like that because I really don't think he's that good, but he's better than Tim Tebow. We have a caller, I believe. Sometimes it's hard to tell with this switchboard. Blog Talk Radio. And by the way, anybody who wants to call in, you know how to do it. I haven't done the show in so long. I don't even remember the call-in number. Hold on, guys. I got to look up the call. You guys remember the call-in? I don't even remember the call-in number.
347-838-9525.
Feel free to call in. The chat room is also open. Didn't get it open in time, but it's open now. You can check us in the chat room. You can send us a message on Twitter. And just say hello. And all the people out there, we have a huge, huge fan base on iTunes that listens to us, a podcast. Just want to say thank you for your support. If you're driving to work, we hope we're entertaining you. Or if you're driving home, we hope you're entertaining you. And let's go to 745. I got a call, 745 area code. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
Commissioner T, K-Star, what's up, guys? This is Jedi Capricorn, by the way.
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, what's up, man?
I just wanted to chime in on this Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez, New York quarterback situation. There's only one championship quarterback in New York. We all know this. And his name is Eli Manning. Only one championship quarterback in the NFC East. His name is Eli Manning. Giants are repeating. Believe that, fellas. Welcome to the new season.
Hey, Jedi, to one of the things that I'm going to tackle a little bit later is the discussion on Eli versus Tony Romo and who's a better quarterback. So if you're around, I may allow you to comment if I see that you're on. I don't know how long you're going to be on live with us, but I'm gonna
listen to the whole show.
All right, great. So hang around. I will give you airtime to comment on what I say. How about that? Because I like
that. Sounds like a plan.
I like that. But let me just say this one thing in general. You are correct. Eli is a champion, and he's a two-time Super Bowl champion. You do remember in 2007 when you guys won it all, that you didn't make the playoffs in 2008.
I recall that, yes.
In 2009. I don't believe you made the playoffs in 2010 either.
They did
in 2000? Okay, so 2008.
No, they didn't make it for 3 years.
That's kind of what I thought. So I appreciate your confidence that you're going to repeat, but history is not in your favor. Just that alone, history is not in your favor. And any other thing,
let me respond to that though. In reality, the fact that they didn't go to the Super, they didn't make the playoffs the following year after previous Super Bowl appearances, in my opinion, has no impact or bearing on what's going to happen this season. That's just a random fact that you could throw in there. But, you know, we have a lot of the same core guys. Tom Coughlin's a genius. I think their chances are good. I really do.
Those who respect history are doomed to repeat it. And there is a lot of statistical fact behind teams that win a Super Bowl one year and how poorly the majority of them do the following year. And if your team doesn't take that seriously, then it will be sitting on the bottom of the NFC East or maybe looking at the Redskins. You know, there's not a lot of hope for the Redskins this year. I think they may have something to look at in a couple of years, but they may be sitting there looking at the Redskins talking about what happened. And I'm not talking as a Cowboy fan. I'm just talking as a football fan. They need to take that seriously. You know,
I'm sure my team takes it seriously. I just don't take that fact seriously because it doesn't go my way.
Let me
chime in and say this. One, you have to understand that because they are the defending champions, teams are going to come at them that much harder. And second,
of course,
do have to consider that the Giants hit a stride towards the end of the season. They hit a really good stride. They found their game. And it's not 100% that they will find their game again at the end of the season. That's the reason why they faltered after they won their last Super Bowl. They didn't find that same stride. This time they did.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. They got hot at the right time.
They found their stride. So, you know, it's not definitely not a guarantee that they'll be there because they have to find their stride. And once again, their division is tough. Their division is tough, and
true,
they don't have the most talented team in that division.
I disagree with that. I think you have the most talented team.
I think the Giants have been more talented when I was on division, but that's just – well, them and the Eagles, that's really heads or tails, but
– Billy, come on, really? Let's come on. Listen, we try to talk as NFL people first and fans second, and I get the homerism because I'm a homer too, but let's be real, okay? When you match up the Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, and Redskins, the two teams – that stand up talent-wise on paper are the Eagles and the Cowboys. On paper, okay? I'm not discounting the Giants and what they're capable of doing and what they've done. But you cannot say on paper that they bring to the table what the Cowboys and the Eagles do. They just don't. And let me back train on one thing. The difference between what the Giants have been able to do and what we've seen the Patriots do, the Saints do, and the Packers of late is the Giants have relied on late season runs and exceptional defense to propel them. And their seasons down the stretch have been up and down, and so there's a lack of consistency there. And while they've gone in, won straight through, and went in and won the Super Bowl, they were also a couple of plays or one game away from not even making the playoffs. And so when you look at the last 5 years, and three of those five, they didn't even make the playoffs. It's very hard to say this team has the wherewithal to come back this year and play at that level and go 11-5, 12-4, you know, and get into the tournament, as Bill Parcells always called it. It's just hard to put your money on that. I think it's going to be a great football season, and I think all four teams in the NFC East are going to battle. And but you know, all four of them can't make it to the playoffs. So. We'll see.
Okay, let me just close. I'll just close out with this comment then. Forget what I said about repeating with the Super Bowl. That is a long shot, you know, to be saying at this point in the season. But I do guarantee we win the division. How's that? Is that a little more realistic?
That's a little bit more realistic, but it's still bold.
I couldn't even pick the Cowboys to win the division right now. Couldn't do it. Right now, my money on the division is the Eagles. Right now. Today.
Yeah.
Right now. That may change in four weeks.
You got a lot of talent.
But the Eagles, yeah, they do. Now, we're going to talk about the Eagles a little bit, too, because now they're starting to concern me, but we're going to get into that. But anyway, hey, hang around. I'll bring you back on when I go into my little rant.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show, guys. Great job, man. Thanks. Welcome back to the new season.
Thanks for the support.
Thank you.
Yep. Later.
All right. All right. So we're gonna move on from Tim Tebow and Mark Sanchez. And you know, the funny part about it is, as much as I complain, We've been on the air for an hour, and we spent 25 minutes talking about, well, maybe not 25, more like about 20, talking about Tim Tebow. So, I mean, I can complain about we got sucked.
I think you want to say thank you to K-Star. Is that what you're trying to say? Thank you, K-Star, for a great topic. You're welcome.
Moving on, and again, guys, 347-838-9524, 347-838-9525. You want to call in? Everybody's welcome to call into the Madden Voice. Except my kids, they're here with me, and they've been wanting to call in and say hi, and I'm telling them no. So everybody else can call in. If my kids are listening, don't you call in? Anyway, I have to go to Train on this, and we're gonna get some philosophy from Dr. Train a little bit later. But right now, I've got to turn to Dr. Train, Chicago Bears fan. A few days ago, last week sometimes, Brandon Marshall, your new wide receiver, has predicted that the Chicago Bears are going to win the Super Bowl this year. Train, I got to ask you, like, love, or hate Brandon Marshall's prediction?
Sorry, D. Yes, because I'm a fan, I have to love it. Because, honestly, without him even saying it, I believe it. I watched what the Giants did last season. And the one thing I did like about what the Giants did last season is that they hit their stride at the right time. One thing we have to remember about Chicago last season is that before we got struck by the football god, for whatever reason, we were 7-3 and were about to hit our stride with one of the easiest remaining six-game schedules left in the league. We were headed in the right direction before everything went downhill for Chicago. Now they've retooled. They have way more talent on offense than they've ever had in the Chicago Bear history. The defense is coming back. Yeah, we are like.
Let me interject for a minute because I think you're misunderstanding my question. We're going to do a prediction. I'm not asking whether you think they're going to win the Super Bowl. What I'm asking you is Brandon Marshall coming out publicly and making that proclamation. Not whether you support your team. I get you're going to support your team, and you're one of the more realistic football fans I've ever met. If your team sucks, you're going to say it, and if they're good, you're going to say it. So I'm not doubting the knowledge of your team and your belief that they could win a Super Bowl this year and you liking the confidence. But do you want your wide receiver who's not played one down for your team this season yet, do you want him publicly saying that and putting a target on your team by saying we're going to win a Super Bowl? That's really the question, not whether you believe it or not. Is that the attention you want drawn to your team?
Asked. Now you ask me a different question. Now let me answer the question just asked.
That's why I clarified it, so that you could give me the answer.
Okay. From that standpoint, no, I don't want to be a target. I like for Chicago to fly under the radar. I want the analysts to get on TV and be like, oh, no, they're not Super Bowl contenders. I want them to say that. So from that standpoint, I would rather just kind of stay quiet on it. I'm never big about teams coming out saying, oh, we'll win the Super Bowl, not even my own. I think the center for Matt Khalil for the Panthers said the same thing. I'm never a big fan of that.
Okay, I agree with you. I agree. K-Star, anything to add on that?
No, I just don't think it was really smart for Brandon Marshall. I mean, the guy's new, and honestly, he's excited, but so was Vince Young, excited about the whole Eagles thing. We saw where that got them. So, but as I say that, I do think the Bears will be a very, very, very interesting team this year, definitely a fourth NFC. So, I mean, I like the confidence, but I don't know if I like someone coming to the Steelers and proclaiming us, Super Bowl favorites or Super Bowl bound, initially. That's just not how it's really – it doesn't really – I mean, let's be honest. How often does that really happen? Like, someone in the offseason says that, and it really happens. It really comes to fruition.
Thank
like,
thank
how often
you.
Does that really happen? I don't
thank
ever – has that happened? Like, it, seriously, like, it's it doesn't happen. So
– no, I mean in modern-day sports, it doesn't happen often.
Right.
You can expand it, but no. I mean, that's – I mean, we can – LeSean McCoy predicts the Eagles are going to be a dynasty. What?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you call yourself a dynasty without winning games like a dynasty?
That's what I'm saying. You were 8-8 last year. You were 8-8. I don't care
why. I don't care that you won your last four. I don't care that you had injuries. I don't care that you beat the Cowboys twice. Whooped us one time real bad. Still hurts. You were still 8-8. Didn't make the playoffs. How do you come and talk about a dynasty? I don't get it. I don't get it. And Andy Reid, and, you know, I don't want to talk bad about Andy Reid. We heard about his son found dead, and our condolences to the Reid family. And, you know, I certainly don't want to talk bad about a guy who's gone through, you know, such a horrible, horrible loss. But I do want to say that you came out and publicly backed your running back, and I think you could have. I just think instead of backing him, you might have wanted to clarify. You know, you may want to soften that, you know, because you don't want that target on your back. You know, you don't want, you know, just like last year, I mean, especially after coming off of last year with Vince Young and the Dream Team, right? And where did that get you? Now, you know, you have somebody that actually says we can be a dynasty? I wonder, you know, there's one thing Bill Parcells once said. Bill Parcells once said a long time ago, this was before he even came to Dallas. Bill Parcells said, you know, people think I'm really a smart man. And I got to tell you, I know football. But that doesn't make me a smart man. It makes me someone who knows football. You take me outside of football, I'm a fish out of water. So I don't consider myself a smart man. People, to me, that are smart know a lot about a lot of things. They don't just know one thing really, really well. They know a lot about a lot of things. Okay? And I always respected that about him. Okay? So what kind of stupidity are you as a running back or as a wide receiver if you're making these kind of predictions? Now, I'm going to go in another direction. I'm torn on this one because we had another prediction by my owner, Jerry Jones, who predicted that the Cowboys are going to win at home against the Giants. And it's a little bit of a softer position than saying you're going to be a dynasty or saying that you're going to win a Super Bowl. So I can't blast him to that level because it's a game. It's a game prediction.
It's the first game of the season.
Well, yeah, right? That one's – He was talking about when they come to Dallas, the first game of the season in the Meadowlands. And the only thing that I'll say, Mr. Jones, with all due respect, I would respect that prediction if you've won any games against the Giants at home in the new stadium. You are 0-3. You're 0-3. You're 0-3. Jerry?
I don't think you heard me. I don't think you heard me.
You're 0-3. You're 0-3. I mean, I'm sorry. I love you guys. I love the team. But you're 0-3. It's just you have no credibility. I get it. It was not an interview. It was a fan session, and you were trying to hype people up. And I get why you did it. But, geez, man, you're 0-3. I mean, really? You know, let's do something, man. Let's do something. I get tired, and I'm going to let you guys talk because I'm getting tired now. I get tired of people that haven't done anything talking. Brandon Marshall, you're a beast. You're a beast. And we already know what you and Jay Cutler can do together. I get it. But why are you predicting Super Bowl? LeSean McCoy, you're a beast. But why are you predicting Dynasty? I get tired of people that haven't won anything. Now, Jerry Jones has won. I'm not saying they haven't won in a long time. So it's time to be quiet. Time to be quiet. Thoughts? Or am I, is something wrong with me, guys? K-Star, you haven't said anything. Am I wrong? Is something wrong with me?
No, you're right. I mean, why are you talking trash to them? Why? You know, why call out the Giants right now? It doesn't make any sense.
They're the Super Bowl champs, crying out loud. They're the Super Bowl champs.
Like, be easy, Jerry. I just think basically predictions, like you said at the beginning, T, they put a target on your back. We can go back to Chris Johnson after he had his 2,000-yard career. Came out, I'm going to run for 2,500. Really? In the AFC? The same year you got to play the Steelers and the Ravens, you're going to run for 2,500? Got smashed that year. Couldn't even get around the corner like he used to. Why?
Mm.
You opened your mouth.
Mm.
Just shut up and run. Just shut up and do you. Because when you open your mouth, you slap the other defenses all across the league in the face. Because in order for you to run two for 2,500 yards, you got to be, man, you got to 100-something yards a game. Come on.
Yeah,
Keep your mouth closed. Play ball.
Do something, and then you can talk. All right, Floyd Money Mayweather is undefeated. Undefeated. And I don't mean, you know, switch sports, but I'm using him as an example. A lot of people, my dad doesn't like him. My dad said he talks too much. He's undefeated. He's never lost as a professional in the ring. He can say whatever he wants. I don't care. Why? Because he backs it up every time. As much as I hate the Giants, they're the champs. You want to talk? I got nothing to say to you. Even the Patriots, though they lost to the Giants, that is a dynasty right there.
Yeah, they still lead to the right.
They have the right to run their mouth. You know, there are certain teams that, to me, have earned the right to run their mouths. And these three teams, the Bears, the Eagles, and the Cowboys, and yes, I'm throwing my Cowboys in there. I'm sorry, guys. It's time to shut up and show and prove. That's all I got to say. Train brought up a
topic. By the way, hold on real quick. I don't mean to cut you off, but I know Shady McCoy personally. I've actually met the guy. He actually was at a Madden tournament over a year ago, Madden 11 season. If you just remember, I was actually in that video game at some point. But anyway, Madden 11 during the year, one of the later tournaments of the year, you know, for fun, it was in Harrisburg, which is where Shady McCoy is actually from. You know, he was out there the whole tournament. He played, and he had a couple of his friends play, and he was there the whole tournament. He was a real cool dude. He was just like anyone else. He just really, you know, obviously, of course, it's Shady McCoy. That name Shady comes for a reason. He had this cocky swagger to him. But, I mean, he's a good dude. And I met him again at the Madden Bowl this past February. And the guy actually recognized me. I didn't even realize it was him. He actually recognized me. So, I mean, again, he's a good dude. He's young. He's an extremely talented running back. Let's not lose sight of that. That man, honestly, and I don't mean to compare anyone to Barry Sanders, but he's the closest thing that we've seen to Barry Sanders' playing style. So, I understand his own personal confidence, but the fact of the matter is he's speaking for 152 people in that locker room, and that's not really okay to do because now Mike Vick has to feel the pressure again. Nnamdi Asamoah, Andy Reid, you know, and rest in peace to his son. That's a tough situation. But and now Andy Reid, these questions are going to come up. They're not going to just go away. And it's just why? Again, why do this to you? I can guarantee I'm willing to make any kind of bet those four teams or those three or whatever that made those claims, including the Panthers, will make it four. None of them will go to the Super Bowl and win it. None of them.
I'm just going to say this on your comments. I'm just going to say this. You know, Train and I talked earlier about the whole nice guy thing. I don't care. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
It's irrelevant.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, when I go out and get a beer with the guy and he's a great guy, I'll shake his hand, you know, and talk to him, and yeah, that's great. But it's irrelevant. It really, I don't care. I'm sure. Hey, I don't know Brandon Marshall, and heck, I don't even know Jerry Jones. But everybody, Jerry Jones, as an owner, has a lot of loyalty out there. A lot of players. He's done a lot of things for a lot of players, giving people second chances, to pay for re. He's done. He's a great guy, billionaire, great guy. I don't care. You know, I don't care. What I care about is what can you do to help your team in whatever capacity you are. And LeSean, I agree with you. His running style, I will agree. I'll go that far. He's the closest running style I've seen to Barry Sanders since Barry Sanders. I will agree with that. He's a phenomenal running back. So why do you need to run your mouth? And if you're such a great guy, why do you need to run your mouth? And if you're on a team that a year ago had a backup quarterback predict that it's called you the dream team and really put a negative shadow on your team for the season, now he's gone, you're one of the franchise players, where is your common sense to say, let me not do that. Let me not do that. You know? Great guy, maybe. I don't disagree with you, K-Star. I know you've met a lot of these players through Madden and different things. I'm sure he is a great guy. But it was a misjudgment to make
those
comments. Yeah, it's not. It's just not relevant to what we're trying to accomplish here, which is get on the field and play some doggone football. That's what this is all about. Train, you brought up the fact, and I looked into it because I didn't even hear this story. Shannon Easton, I don't know her.
Yeah, me either.
NFL female referee. You know, I mean, we've seen a lot over the years in sports. Now, I mean, I think Phyllis George was one of the first female analysts that CBS had about, God, maybe 30 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, and now it's commonplace. You go on ESPN, NFL Network, there's women everywhere commentating on sports, doing interviews, going into locker rooms and all of that. You know, but now we're talking about a female referee. And Train, you know, you asked about this.
What are your thoughts on the NFL's first female referee?
Like you said, you know, there have been a lot of breakthroughs as far as females coming into sports. And I have nothing against those, but I know at some point, to me, I feel like at some point, you have to be careful as far as, like, drawing a line, because on the football field, it's a lot more physical than, you know, on, sitting behind the desk or sitting with the cameras, lights, cameras, action on you, and you're talking about football. I mean, referees getting ran over out there. Referees get in the middle of collisions. Referees are trying to separate 200-300-something-pound linemen from taking each other's helmets off because they're pissed off. And you're going to put a female in the middle of that. I don't like it. I don't like it.
K-Star?
I don't know. It just seems a little weird. I mean, but then again, anything different is a little weird at first. But they are in harm's way directly. These are NFL football players, some of the best athletes in the whole nation, some of the meanest, toughest, you know, most physical guys out there. And honestly, I mean, let's be real. These players sometimes can get a little testy and feel a little disrespectful. What happens when a player, you know, does the wrong thing to this lady? And I mean, is it really worth the possible controversy, the possible, you know, implications of it? I don't think it is. I wish for the best. I hope nothing, you know, happens bad to her. But let's be real. If one of these athletes do, if Troy Polamalu or if Terrell Owens back in Seattle or, you know, something like that, barrels into her, how is she, you know, going to escape injury? You know, I mean, a lot of these guys can't do it. And, I mean, I'm sorry, ladies out there, I don't mean to put you guys down. Man, you guys are wonderful. We honestly can't do it without you. But physically, they're not quite as strong as men are, especially NFL athletes. Like, what are we doing out here? So it'll be interesting, but I just don't know if it's really worth the possible ramifications of it.
You know, I'm torn on this one because I believe everybody deserves a chance. You know, as a black man, I've seen a lot of things, a lot of inequities dealt with personally, and certainly know a lot about, you know, where we are as far as, for instance, NFL head coaches, where we are today versus where we were 20 years ago, ownership, you know, and clearly have dealt with race challenges of just trying to have a level playing field. So I guess I would be hypocritical if I were to have a negative stance solely because of someone's sex. And so from a purely let's give it a chance standpoint, I'm okay with it. But it's a hard adjustment, and it's just as hard as it was when I first started seeing a lot of women covering NFL and analyzing NFL games, and I'm sitting there saying, you know, you never, ever, ever played the game, most likely. You know, what do you know about football? But 15 years later, you know what? They're doing a pretty doggone good job. You know, it's almost now where I don't even notice anymore, other than some of them are kind of cute. But beyond noticing that some of them look kind of good, as far as the content of what they're saying, they're actually not bad. And to take this one step further, some of the people that I see covering and analyzing NFL games that used to play pro football are horrible. I'll give you one example of someone who was horrible at it. I don't even know if he's still doing it anywhere, but he was with ESPN for a while, and then I believe he went to NFL Network. Now I'm not sure if he's still doing it. But Emmitt Smith was horrible. And we're talking arguably, you can't not have a conversation about the greatest running backs of all time and not have him in that discussion. Whether you believe it or not is another discussion, but he's in that conversation. So certainly the guy comes in with the knowledge. But he was a horrible analyst. Damon Woody, ESPN, I change the channel when he comes on. It's horrible, horrible. So when I see that, then I say, you know what? Why not? When we watch some of these NFL games, some of these college games, we see field goals getting kicked. What was that game last year where they kicked the field goal and it was clearly a miss and they called it good? We got NFL replay because refs miss calls. You know what? Let's give her a chance. I hope nothing happens to her physically, but She understands. She knows the risk. You know, she understands. You can't decide to want to be an NFL referee and not realize how violent of a game it is and how on any given play that could be you caught up between, you know, offense and defense and getting taken out. Eh, let's give her a chance. It's tough for me to get used to. Let's give her a chance. Let's see. Let's see what she's got. I'll reserve my full opinion till after. But let's give it a chance. All right, let's move on. Train, this next segment is we're going to allow each of us some time to talk about a topic that is near and dear to our hearts. And we have Dr. Train's philosophy, and then we're going to have a minute with K-Star, and he has got a variety of things that he may want to cover. And then, of course, we'll finish off this segment with T-Bonics with Commissioner T. So let's start with Dr. Train's philosophy. Take it away.
All right. One of the things that we noticed at the beginning of the last season was that defenses were horrifically slow. I mean, it's almost like someone had a remote, hit the slow-mo on the defense and the fast pace on the offense, and passing attacks went off last season. Quarterbacks broke a lot of records. We had, two quarterbacks over 5,000, quite a few over 4,000. Had a few with 40-something, with 40-plus touchdowns. And the one thing that we brought up last season is that, you know, teams went without camp. They went without an off-season program, you know. They did get some training camp, but, you know, they didn't get a chance to get themselves in condition for training camp, and then, bam, the season starts. So with that, you know, I wonder, now that the teams have had a full off-season, where defenses have been able to get their minds and bodies ready, you know, to read and react to all these passing attacks. And they've seen what these teams can do. They've seen what the Saints can do. They've seen what the Packers can do, what the Patriots can do when it comes to passing the ball. Will these passing attacks still be as potent as they were last season?
What are your thoughts?
I kind of want to hear from y'all before I give my answer.
I think absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think there's absolutely no way that we're going to see what we saw last year. Last year, to me, was a combination of, you know, the lockout, the lack of conditioning, and it is clear to me that because it was consistent around the league, offenses – production were higher, and it took defenses a while to get in sync. And, you know, we saw numbers last year that we've never, ever seen before. I mean, what, three? I'm not looking at it off the top of my head. Three people beat, or maybe two, and I think one, the third was right there, Dan Marino's record. I mean, that's insane. That's insane. That record was from 1984, you know? So it's insane that you know, this season produced three people that threw over 5,000 yards. It's insane. So to me, it's a definite production, an outcome of a very small training camp and the lockout. And this year is absolutely – I'm sorry, you know, we may touch on some fantasy football tonight, time permitting, but I'm sorry, you fantasy football guys out there, but you need to take this into consideration when you're doing your draft. Defense this year is definitely going to be a bigger issue than it was last year. There's absolutely no – and we saw it down the stretch last year. We saw defenses coming into their own last year. We saw more sacks. We saw quarterbacks not having, you know, the 400 and 500 yard per games that they were having early in the season. We saw less of that as the season went on. So I personally don't think there's any. I will go on the record and say right now, and I reserve the right to change this after watching preseason, I don't think we'll have one 5,000 yard passer next year. I don't think we'll have one. K-Star?
It's tough because at one end, maybe it was the lockout. As we saw, you know, Cam Newton had his biggest games of all at the beginning of the year, you know, as far as 100-yard passing games go. But as the season comes turning, so did, you know, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. They, you know, started out, 14-0, 12-0, whatever. You know, and they slowed down a little bit. But let's remember what Aaron Rodgers did to the Bears at week 15. you know, and just later down the season, do I think there'll be a 5,000-yard passer? No, just because that's hard to do. Like, let's be real. But I do think we're in a new era. I do think that, of course, numbers are going to be up quite a bit. I think we'll see several 4,000-yard passers, of course, probably like 10 or 11. But as far as 5,000 yards go, I think that was a little fluky as well. Especially 3-1 season, that was ridiculous. But I still think points are going to be high. I mean, the good defense is good defense. The Texans defense, the Ravens, Steelers, you know, Bears, you know, teams like that will play good defense. But it's a passing league, and the ball with these quarterbacks in the league these days and the rules of the game, there's still going to be a lot of high-scoring games. It might come down maybe, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 points a game, which is a significant difference through a 16, you know, game season. But it's still going to be a very high-scoring league. This is the new wave NFL, and that's why quarterbacks are on such a premium.
All right. Now that I've heard both of you guys, my answer is no, 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 no. They won't be as potent. First of all, all teams have had their off season now. They've been able to, as Charles Tillman put it last season, get football ready. Get football ready mentally, get football ready physically. Okay? Second, they have all the film. They have a whole year's film of what these teams did when it came to passing the ball. Not so much as let me see how this team passed the ball, but they can see where defenses faltered against these passing attacks. So I just think with that film study, with the full off-season program, we'll now get a start of the season where our defenses, where the defenses across the league are on point, and they're ready because they've drafted. You have teams now drafting corners to play safety just so they can be able to play coverage better. Having a safety in the box, you don't see that too often. Now, you do have the more talented ones like Polamalu, who has a great read and react, like Ed Reed, that are very good at reading and reacting. But, what's that?
It's hard to
tell. What background is that?
Sorry?
Let's hear some background. Let's go and stop talking. Who's background is that? Hello?
Go on now. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, good. So I just say all that to say, you know, I don't see it happening this season. You know, I think the defenses will be ready, you know, and they'll be ready to read and respond. They drafted, they adjusted their defensive schemes to be ready for the different passing attacks that they, you know, that they experienced last season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just, you know, I mean, I can quickly just look at what Dallas has done in the off season, and it was all defense. It was all defense.
Yeah.
And this is a team that has one of the top defensive coordinators in the game. But last year there was no, you know, you hire this guy to come in and install a new defense with no training camp and very little preseason, and it's one of the more complicated defenses in the NFL. And so, you know, and we know the trouble Dallas had on defense last year. So I'm using it as an example, but I completely agree with you that this year I think it's going to swing the other direction a bit. There'll be no 5,000-yard passers, in my opinion. And, you know, I think that it's going to be more of a ground and pound. You know, it's going to go back to old-style football. Run, set up the pass. Run, set up the pass. You know, I think that's what we're really going to see this year. I really, really do.
Hopefully the injuries are down, though, because we lost a lot of key players early in the year, like Eric Berry, Jamal Charles, you know, guys like that. It sucked. We lost a lot of good guys, you know, Kenny Britt. People were just falling like drones in early in the year. So hopefully, if anything else, the lockout helped the Hammies of the world and, you know, those guys actually be well-conditioned, ready for the start of football.
Yeah, I agree. All right, and K-Star, you're up, and you can talk about if you want to update anything in the Madden world or, you know, you're quickly becoming your Tim Tebow. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about Cam Newton. The floor is yours.
No real Madden stuff right now, aside from the fact that VG, Virgin Gaming, is doing the Madden Challenge again this year. As they say, it's going to keep getting bigger as far as the prize pool goes. And last year, the top place was 140,000, and just the Madden pool combined was over 400,000. Apparently, they're going to make it a little higher than that this year. So, obviously, very excited about that as Madden comes out this month, August 28th. But I want to talk a little fantasy football because, let's be real, it's rare these days when we have
you know, diehard football fans who don't play, you know, fantasy football. And it just so happened that a lot of owners out there who are blessed, who have been blessed, like I have been blessed, to have the number one pick overall in the latest fantasy draft this year. As you guys know, and remember, last year I won one of my, you know, money fantasy football leagues, and I was very proud of it. And I, too, last year had that first pick in the draft, and it was Arian Foster, I took last year. Now, this year, the choice, in my opinion, and owners alike, is actually the data to back this up, was between Arian Foster and Aaron Rodgers. So, to everyone out there, if you're playing a 6 point per touchdown for a quarterback, passing touchdown for Aaron Rodgers, in my personal opinion, in my expertise, I think it's much easier to build around a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers than it is a running back like Arian Foster. Now, I go against my normal philosophy. As you guys know, I won a whole league last year with, you know, Arian Foster and then drafted Matt Stafford late. But why would you not take the top scorer of all fantasy football by a wide margin? Yeah, sure, the quarterback's a little bit deeper than running back, and I get that. But running back is a crapshoot. Outside of Arian Foster, and again, that could play to your argument, outside of Arian Foster, Ray Rice, LeSean McCoy, MJD, and probably missing someone else, it is quite the crapshoot. There's a lot of question marks, injuries, things alike. But it's much easier to build around a quarterback who's not going to take as much beating as a running back, say Arian Foster, because he did miss 2 games earlier in the year last year, which could have cost me the playoffs. Again, it could have cost a lot of people games last year, and it could cost you games this year. There's no guarantee that your running back's going to stay healthy. So to all those who are going to take the Ray Rice, LeSean McCoy, the Arian Foster over Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady at the top of the draft, let me remind you that the top scorers in fantasy football now and forever will be going forward, you know, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's of the world. Because, again, all you have to do is just build around Aaron Rodgers, throw in 3 or 4 more players that are good. Not great, just good players, and help him out. You've got a team that's been contending all year. But if you get the Arian Foster and you build around him, the problem is if Arian Foster goes down, what do you really have? And let's be honest, running backs last year went down like flies. McFadden, Peterson, you know, Foster, get, you know, missed a couple of games. Jamal Charles, everyone.
DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, DeMarco Murray. I mean, really, who didn't get hurt last year at the running back position? It was very rare, which is why, you know, people are so kind of whole about getting that running back early this year. But again, that running back's going to get pounded in this NFL. And I want to take my chances with consistency and greatness with Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Drew Brees before I throw my hat into the running backs.
Well, I would say, you know, that almost ties into Dr. Train's philosophy, because a lot of those injuries that happened last year, a lot of those potent attacks that happened last year with those quarterbacks putting up so many fantasy football points came when we did not have an offseason, coming straight through a rush training camp and trying to get those guys football ready mentally and physically. So I would recaution anyone on your caution to say that as far as the quarterback concern, in my opinion, when it comes to fantasy football, I'm not saying you don't want to end up with a slouch, but I think you can get yourself a good quarterback and stack yourself at the other positions. I don't think you build around your quarterback in fantasy football.
But if you don't have a good quarterback, you already are in a huge disadvantage. Like,
I
only feel like this.
I disagree.
I had a team last year. Hold on, wait. I had a team last year. Like, this is Adrian Peterson, Ahmad Bradshaw, Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, Cam Newton, right? And we lost in the first round of the playoffs. And a lot of it had Adrian Peterson's lingering injury. The guy who won it all had Aaron Rodgers. And he didn't have that much aside from Aaron Rodgers because a lot of his players died. The fact of the matter is he had the consistency that was Aaron Rodgers. And that's really what
Once again, it ties into what we just discussed in Dr. Train's philosophy. These guys have had an off season now. So it'll probably be easier to compare it after this season than for you to say it. Now, last season was just ridiculous. But I don't see that happening.
Aaron Rodgers was still the top scorer, even
in the seasons before that, we've seen guys that, hey, we had a guy stacked. T.U., remember? The guy that stacked up on running backs?
Yep.
Would destroy us in that league. And he stacked up on running backs because at the end of the season, those guys were running so hard. So, like I said, I disagree because I've seen
this.
let me chime in and just say this. I actually agree with both of you, which is I really think that you're both right. I think K-Star, you're making a general statement off an unusual year. Last year was an anomaly. No training camp, no preseason to speak of, and we had quarterbacks going out of their mind. But I agree with you. If you have the number one pick in an Aaron Rodgers or a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady or even maybe a Peyton Manning, if he's going to be what he's always been, if an exceptional elite quarterback like that is available, then you got to go get him, okay? I had Drew Brees on both my teams, and he, in one league, we get one keeper. I pick Drew Brees. In the other league, I get an offensive, a defensive, and then another type of keeper. And one of my keepers was Drew Brees because there's not a lot of elite quarterbacks out there. So if you can get one of those, I think you got to get one. I also agree
just
with Train. Well, let me finish. I also agree with Train, though, as a general philosophy. I think you have to you can't just rely on that one quarterback, because what happens if he does go down and that's where all your points are coming from? You do need to have some other players. And we've seen a guy in the leagues that we're in, Train and I, and to be honest with you, not to throw my stuff out there, because Train and I are competitors in this league, but I did that last year, to be totally honest with you. I watched this guy, Pimmer, rack up with 5 and 6 running backs and annihilate us. And I said, you know what? I'm doing that last year. And I stacked up on running backs, and I still had Drew Brees and won one season, one league, went to the championship in another one.
The thing is, I agree with the philosophy, because the fact of the matter is I won a whole league doing the Arian Foster pick last year. But what I'm saying is, when you are faced with a number one pick and you have Aaron Rodgers, who last 2 years in the leading scorer in the NFL, in fantasy as well, obviously, and Arian Foster, I think it's so tough not to take Aaron Rodgers just because, again, I mean, I know there wasn't training camp last year, but the fact of the matter is running backs still get hurt. And there's going to be a lot of running backs in the waiver wire pickup throughout the whole year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying your first pick, and you, I mean, I'm sorry, if you have the first pick in fantasy,
overall,
keepers are not – first pick overall, okay, irrespective of what keepers are, and someone like – and it became Aaron Rodgers is available or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, I agree. I'm going after that elite quarterback. I have to agree with that. Train, do you disagree with that assertion?
No, I don't disagree with that, because let's think about those three teams. What do they do best?
Exactly.
Pass the ball. So you know guaranteed the offense is going to them, whether they have a good game or bad. Come on, Aaron Rodgers' bad game is, let's say, 300 yards.
Yeah, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, that's his bad game.
That's just a bad game. And the same thing with the rest of them. 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, and that's their bad game. So, no, I don't disagree with you with that. I just don't agree that you have to that's what you build around. Because
I mean, go ahead. Sorry, Trent.
Yeah, I'm just saying I think you could be a lot more solid at all the other positions, because you only got one quarterback.
Sure.
But you got two running backs, two wide receivers, one running back, wide receiver, tight end position. And so that means running backs and wide receivers having top-notch starters for those three makes your team scary from week 1 to week 17.
Yeah. I agree. Again, I follow that strategy pretty much to a T. I just think it's the number one pick. Like, Aaron Rodgers is so phenomenal. It's how do you not? I always agree with the philosophy. I've always done that personally, you know, running backs in the second on my roster, because there's a bunch of good quarterbacks, of course. But the fact of the matter is there's only like three, like, of those elite, just consistent cogs of points of 30-plus every freaking week. And it's like, well, let's be real. I mean, there's a lot of good receivers, and, you know, there's a lot of questionable running backs, but there's also a lot of injuries that come to running backs. So I feel like in this day of fantasy football and the NFL, with quarterbacks being so important, I mean, lockout or not, I just don't think it's really going to change. And again, this took me a few days to decide, because I knew I had the first pick for a few days, and I was in a mock draft. And to be honest, I felt like I had better teams when I did a mock draft with drafting Foster. I had some great teams, but at the end of the day, I mean, I just think it's so much easier to build it around Aaron Rodgers and not to worry about injury or anything like that, because it's a Packers offense, let's be real. And what I decided to do, because I had Aaron Rodgers, my personal strategy was, second round, at the end of the second round, I have 2 picks in a row. And if Ray Jennings or Jordy Nelson were there, I'm doubling up. I'm taking one of them. I'm taking running back. So I ended up getting Aaron Rodgers, Jennings, and Marshawn Lynch in that situation. But it's just, you know, again, I just thought it was a good question to ask because a lot of people out there. The number one average draft position on CBS Sports from one overall is Arian Foster. Fit by point, I think 4% I saw was Aaron Rodgers. So it's a serious question owners are having to face this year when they're faced with the number one pick overall. So it's out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to come back more towards NFL. And, you know, my moment, and I've called my moment T-Bonics. And T-Bonics, for those of you who might be new to the Madden Voice, and just so everybody knows, got about 20 minutes left in the show. So if you want to call in and get some last-minute comments or send us a message, we're on Twitter, The Madden Voice. We're on Facebook, The Madden Voice. Or you can call in at 347-838-9525. And Jedi, if you're out there listening, I'm about to go there. There was a lot of conversation over the last several weeks about Eli Manning versus Tony Romo. And the reason that this came up again was because Armani Toomer, who is now a football analyst, retired, but 07 Super Bowl with Eli, actually came out and said that he thinks Tony Romo is the better quarterback of the two. And so, of course, that got a lot of people talking. Like, how can Armani Toomer, who played with Eli, pick Tony Romo? Now, my first thought when I heard this was, well, clearly this is a guy who watches First Take and it is decided that he wants to become the next big thing. And so how do you get attention? Well, you're a former New York Giant wide receiver. And I know he played for other teams. I couldn't even tell you because we all know him as a Giant. And he won a Super Bowl there with Eli Manning. So what is the best way to get attention? Well, to say that your nemesis, your arch rival, is a better quarterback. To me, it was complete hype, okay, to me. Now, I don't know Armani Toomer. I could be wrong. But to me, it was complete hype, okay? But it got a lot of people talking. And it was a conversation that we had last year several times about who's better, Romo or Eli, Romo or Eli, Romo or Eli, right? So, you know, I sat there and I thought long and hard about it, and I tried to be objective. And, you know, NFL Network did a top 100 players, which we never really got a chance to review. I completely lost interest when I saw them put Romo at 91. To me, it killed all credibility in the rankings, and I know it was voted on by the NFL players. Don't get me wrong. I know why, you know, where it came from, but to me, there's no credibility when Tony Romo was at 91. I don't know anybody who knows football who would put Tony Romo at 91. It just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, I thought about this long and hard, and I've come to the conclusion, not surprisingly, that Tony Romo is the better quarterback. Now, I want to clarify the question that I am answering. Here's the question that I'm answering. Who is the better quarterback? Who is the better quarterback? Not who is the better team. Not who has the better supporting cast. Not who has the better coach. Who has the better organization. Quarterback. Who is the better quarterback? To me, it's Tony Romo. And to me, talent-wise, it's not even close. Eli Manning is not even the best quarterback in his family. I'm sorry. He's not. Yes, he's got two Super Bowls. Let's put it out there. And everybody who makes the case for Eli Manning having two Super Bowls, that's what they hang their hat on. He has two Super Bowls. And I give him credit because he was the quarterback of the New York Giants under Tom Coughlin who won two Super Bowls. So I give him credit for that. But did they really win the Super Bowls because of Eli Manning? Or did they win the Super Bowl because of that aggressive pass-rushing defense that they had? Eli played well, but he played well enough where you have to say he's a Hall of Famer and he's a great quarterback. I'm falling short of that. He played well. He's talented. He's an NFL quarterback, for crying out loud. There's only 32 starting quarterbacks in the world, so I'll give him his credit. But to say that he has a better talent than Tony Romo, let me just throw a few numbers at you. Just a few. When I look at a quarterback playing the game, one of the things we talked about with Tim Tebow was he cannot throw the ball, right? So one of the things you want to look at is throwing the football, right? That's what a quarterback's job is, throw the football, right? Can't say the quarterback's job is to win games because there's 10 other guys on offense and there's 11 guys on defense. So everybody has a role there.
The quarterback has his job, is the leader, but he has his job. Eli Manning's completion percentage, 58.4 career. Tony Romo, 64.5. Not even close. We're not talking 58 and 59. We're talking 58% to 64%. Rating. We're going to use the NFL rating because QBR has only been out for a few years. 82.1 to 96.9 quarterback rating, NFL style. Interception percentage, right? Your job is to throw the ball. So how many interceptions do you throw? 3.3% for Manning, 2.8% for Romo. Last year, when Eli Manning went to the Super Bowl and won, he had a QBR of 61. Matt Hasselbeck, Carson Palmer, Michael Vick, Philip Rivers, Matthew Stafford, Matt Schaub, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, all had higher QBRs than Eli Manning. And so did Tony Romo, who was only bested by Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers. Tony Romo is the number two rated quarterback of all time. I don't believe you guys heard me. I don't believe the Madden Voice Nation heard me. Tony Romo is the number two rated quarterback of all time. And Eli Manning is not number one. So when I look at talent quarterback position, and let me remind you that Tony Romo was an undrafted free agent. Okay, he didn't come in with the pedigree that Eli Manning came in. He didn't come in and get drafted and said, no, I'm not playing for San Diego. I'm sorry. No, that's not happening. He didn't come in with his older quarterback, older brother as already one of the best quarterbacks in the league, his father having played 14 years for the Saints. Tony Romo came in as just an athlete trying to get a job playing football. Tony Romo played under Bill Parcells, but didn't play 16 games under Bill Parcells. Tony Romo played 4 years under Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips. And now is in his second year under Jason Garrett. Last year, played the best he's ever played with no training camp. I'm sorry. Did the Giants have better teams than the Cowboys? Absolutely. Did they have a better team last year? Absolutely. Did they have a better team in 07 when they won it all? Absolutely. Have they had a better defense probably every year in the last 5 years? Yep, probably. But is Eli Manning a better quarterback than Tony Romo? Sorry, guys. I don't see it. And I think this year, and I'll save my predictions for later, but I think this year, Tony Romo is going to show you why he's the best quarterback in the NFC East. I open it up for discussion.
Well, I'm going to keep mine short, man. Simple put, statistics show that Tony Romo is just better at the quarterback position. It's as simple as that. I mean, even watching him play, Tony Romo played better at the quarterback. I like what Eli does, and he does have his own goal. But we all know what that defense has done for the Giants. But, Jeff, the question itself is which one is the best quarterback? And the best quarterback is Tony Romo.
I can't believe I'm here right now. You guys disgust
me. Yeah, you heard it.
You guys disgust me right now. I'm disgusted. I'm thoroughly – I can understand T, but Train, at least T has a bias. Train, are you –
It's not about being a bias. Look, I just told you at the
initial. No. I know there's no bias. That's why I'm thoroughly disappointed in you. Because what's the quarterback's job? What are part of the quarterback's responsibility? Yes, you're right. Maybe Eli's had a better supporting cast. But let's be honest. Have the Cowboys not underachieved with that talent that we were just depicting earlier of what they had, them and the Eagles having all this talent? Why, if they've had the better quarterback, has it not shown? Why is it that in these close games, something always just seems to happen? We have to talk about Tony Romo the next day and why he can't still get it done. And why on earth are you telling me the second rated quarterback of all time is Tony Romo? Does that not show you that those stats are deceptive? That stat has to obviously have some kind of deception to it. If you're telling me Tony Romo of all time, NFL quarterbacks, is second of all time, clearly
those numbers being twisted and distorted some way.
I don't know what you're basing yours off of, man. You know, I don't know what you're basing
total package
yours off of.
Because
maybe it's
spoiled.
At the quarterback position, then yes, I'm going to say Tony Romo. I'm not going to say Eli Manning. I'm going to help
K-Star because I like K-Star. Okay, K-Star, you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. You guys have won 6 Super Bowls, one of the most storied franchises ever. Great pedigree, great history, and I got a lot of respect, even though we're fierce rivals. But you do know that you're spoiled because you had Chuck Knoll. You had Listen to me. 3 coaches: Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. All 3 incredible coaches. Incredible. All 3 should be in the Hall of Fame. If I know Chuck Knoll's already there, Cowher should be going, and Mike Tomlin should be going too. Okay, all 3. Okay. Tony Romo's played for Bill Parcells, not even a full season. We all know Bill Parcells is a Hall of Fame quarterback, okay? I mean, coach. But not even a full season. Then he played 4 seasons under defensive specialist Wade Phillips. Defensive specialist Wade Phillips, who has never won a thing in his life. Nothing. And that was his quarterback. And with that said, still was on teams that were able to produce the most points in Cowboys history, the most yards in Cowboys history. The problem has never been the offense. Unfortunately, as we saw last year, with Wade Phillips' defense that is now being coached by Rex Ryan, who had no offseason to get things together, the problem is with the defense. The problem there. Now, thank God the Cowboys are addressing that, and I expect big things this year, but that's not the topic. The topic is the better quarterback. And you're coming from an organization that has had excellent leadership at the top. Excellent. You don't get better than those 3 names. I'm sorry. You just don't. So you're spoiled. You know? You bring Big Ben in, who's a great quarterback. You put him under Cowher and Tomlin, and look what the guy does. But I promise you this. If you didn't have that level of quarterback, you'd be sitting on my side saying how great Big Ben is. He just needs a coach. He just needs someone that he can look up to that's going to show him how to do this right. He's got all the talent in the world, but for crying out loud, his coach sucks butt. Now, Jason Garrett didn't even have an offseason last year. I give him a pass for last year. This year, he's got to get it done. There's no pass anymore. This year, the team has to get it done. He's had offseason. He's had the draft, offseason, training camp, preseason. This is his team. But in essence, this is really his first year. And I don't want to talk about the year before he took over halfway through with Tony Romo and a broken collarbone. I didn't even have Tony Romo. John Kitna. What? So you can't just look at a couple of games where Tony made a bad interception, a bad play,
not a couple,
which Eli does too, and say that that's his whole career. I'm sorry?
It's not a couple. Since 2006, he's won 1 playoff game. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Cowboys have always been stacked with talent. I think we can all agree with that, but something hasn't clicked. And you're right. They did have Wade Phillips, the defensive coach, and they what they go 13-3 his first season there? And they did, right? And they lost – who did they lose to? The New York Giants and Eli Manning on the way. They lost to the Giants at home, correct?
Absolutely.
What happened at the end of that game? This is just encompassing Tony Romo's career. What happened at the end of the game? He threw an interception in the end zone, did he not? Well, the problem is, and I agree, the problem is that's happened for years and years. That's a career. This is a career. Come on, not an upstart quarterback. This is a career of failure.
Ask a career of failure?
A career of failure. What? There's a reason why. Listen, he was 91 on the players list. You know why? Because the players don't respect him because he can't win any of the games when they're on the line.
Perhaps about whether the players respect him or not. He's 91 because he's a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
That's exactly why he's 91.
You throw out.
Why is DeMarcus Ware at 9?
Well, DeMarcus Ware is a beast.
Okay.
Well, he gets 20 sacks a year. Has anybody done that? No one has done that. So that's why. I mean, at some point, you have to say, okay, you got to give somebody some credit here. DeMarcus Ware gets 20 sacks. Count it. Book it. 20 sacks. My point is this. Yes, he threw an interception at the end of the game against the Giants. It was also a 4th-down play, and everybody was covered because the Giants' defense is that damn good. You going to say that Eli Manning's better than Tom Brady because he beat Tom Brady in 2 Super Bowls?
Let me hear you say that.
No, no, but it tells you a lot about Tom, or it tells you a lot about Eli Manning in a big game. He's a very good quarterback. Like, he's just better. Like, he's done everything in his career. What has Eli not done in his career that Romo has?
You
have
nothing to support
what you're saying.
Is Eli a better quarterback than Tom Brady? He beat him in 2 Super Bowls. Is he a better quarterback than Tom Brady?
No, because his body of work isn't that of Tom Brady's.
But here's the thing.
No, you're not looking at. Okay, here's the thing. Twist words. You're not looking at the body of work. The body of work suggests that Tony Romo is a career playoff loser. Sorry. Is that not true? Actual? You want to read facts into it? Can we not look at his whole career and tell you what it says as a big 1-2 playoff record with two playoff appearances?
And Wade Phillips has nothing to do with that at all, right? The head coach has nothing to
Wade
do with
Phillips,
that, right?
When Wade Phillips came there, they went 13-3. They had a great defense the first couple of years.
It's all Tony Romo's fault, right? It has nothing to do with Wade Phillips. It has nothing to do with the head coach. It has nothing to do with the system he puts in, right?
Let me ask you something. Would the Cowboys not have won the division if not for a few mistakes that Romo made last year in any of these games? The Lions game, the Jets game. These are all pretty close games, are they not?
All
the Giants game.
Okay, you can what you're doing now. You can pick apart every single quarterback in the league like that.
No, wrong. Because the thing is, not every single quarterback is wrapped.
31 touchdowns and 10 interceptions last year. 31 touchdowns and 10 interceptions last year. 102.9 quarterback rating last year. And you're sitting here telling me that it was Tony Romo's fault? It wasn't the defense. Blew 6 fourth quarter leads last year. Wasn't the defense. Don't come at me with stats unless you come correct. It wasn't the defense that blew 6 fourth quarter leads that Tony Romo gave them. It wasn't their fault. It was Tony Romo's fault because of 2 games, one against the Jets and one against the Lions. So it's his fault.
Were those not 2 critical games in that tight division? Why did he have to go to New York very end of the season? Why did he have to go to that last game? The fact of the matter is, look, he's a good quarterback. The fact that Eli Manning, when these games have hung in the balance, he's taken charge. That's what Tony Romo had yet to do.
They were up against the Patriots, and Tom Brady came back and scored. They were up against the Giants, and Eli Manning came back and scored. That's a defensive issue. That's not Tony Romo.
We're comparing the two players, and we're comparing situations.
They finished 8-8. 6 fourth quarter leads lost. 6 last year. That is not Tony Romo's fault. If you want to say the Jets game was his fault, I'll give you that 1. If you want to say the Lions game was his fault, I'll give you 2. I can count 6 games where the defense did not make a play when Tony gave them the lead late in the fourth quarter and said, close it out, the game's over, and they couldn't stop whatever offense they were playing. So instead of 8-8, take those 6, and what's the record? 14-2. And what are the 2 losses? The Jets and the Lions. Guess what? It becomes inconsequential when you're 14-2 and you're the number 2 seed in the NFC. Doesn't matter.
Here's the thing, though. It comes consequential when you're 8-8 and you're in a tight division race. You let games out there to dry. I mean, they could have been 10-6. They could have made the playoffs, but they didn't.
Or the other 6 games that he gave them. He in the fourth quarter, marched them downfield and scored, and they were leading in the fourth quarter, and they lost the lead because of the defense. And we're going to ignore that 6 times last year. We're going to ignore that, but we're going to count 2 games that happened, and both were earlier in the season. We're going to talk about that. So those 2 games were in the first 6 games of the season. We're going to talk about those. We're not talking about the other 6 that the defense lost. See, when I say something, I'm talking from a factual standpoint. Last year, Tony Romo was not the fault. And people
– we're not talking about just last year.
Well, you brought up last year.
We're talking about his whole career.
We're talking about his whole body of work. Now we're not talking about last year because I just shut down your argument.
No, not, first of all, you did not. And second of all, the fact of the matter is we're talking about his whole career. It's the same story. It's always the same story. It's always something else. The fact of the matter is you have to perform at the end of these games. And, yes, he had his team blow a couple of leads. But the fact of the matter is he had a chance to win the Bucs game when they went down there, had a horrific game. Maybe that wasn't his fault. Maybe that was more on Coach Garrett for the god-awful time management. The Detroit game was just one of the worst quarterback performances I've ever seen to cough up a game. And then the Jets game, I mean, again, these
that's
are
all you
all
got.
Games.
You got two games, but you keep ignoring. By the way, everybody, we're about to go into we're about to go off live, but we are still going to stream for another few minutes while I can keep eating this boy's lunch. 347-838-9525 or come to blogtalkradio.com/TheMaddenVoice if you want to hear this whooping that I'm putting on him. Come on in. We're about to go live off the air, but we're going to stay on for another few minutes after we go off live. Check this out. And for those of you who are archiving us, well, you ain't got to go nowhere because you still get us. 347-838-9525 or blogtalkradio.com/TheMaddenVoice. Didn't you hear us? Thanks for tuning in. Back to K-Star. You keep talking about two games that happened in early in the season, and you ignore, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you off the hook. 6 fourth-quarter leads that the defense blew, and you're going to sit there and still blame Tony Romo because they went 8-8?
Let me ask you a question. Did Eli Manning have throughout the whole year?
Wait a minute. You, I have to answer your question if you don't get to answer my question. Answer my question.
What's the
question? Can I get add this on top of the fact that it's easy for you to break down Tony Romo because, trust me, if he messes up, the NFL will highlight it. But
because it's happened for so long.
You don't consider the fact that the Giants only edged him out by one game to get the division?
That's exactly my whole point.
And that Eli Manning was the quarterback. They only had a 9-7 record. What they did was hit their stride.
You're making my point.
As a team, K-Star, as a team, not as Eli Manning going off and throwing and slinging the ball all over the field. No, they hit their stride as a team. It wasn't Eli Manning. It was the Giants. But you break down Tony Romo and look at all his faults, but you look at no faults of Eli Manning and just say he's got to be better because he's done this. Well, Tony Romo has also brought out some games at the end. He's also led the Cowboys down the field to win some games at the end, but that doesn't matter. You go on a period, look, by stats and by play at the quarterback position without the supporting cast, Tony Romo is the better quarterback.
And K-Star, let me just say one other thing. K-Star, you keep talking about two games from last year, okay, because that's all you got. And do you realize the Jets was week one and the Lions was week four? And that's all you've got on Tony Romo last year, week one and week four. That's it. That's all you've got.
Tony Romo?
The problem here is that you ignore the facts. You talk about the Jets game. Week one. You talk about the Lions game, week four. That's it. That's all you've got for the whole season that you can pick apart from Tony and say, oh, my God, here we go again. The rest of the season, the man was butter. 102.9 quarterback rating. 102.9.
Cool. He's also the second-rated quarterback of all time, right, with that all-important stat.
Offensive player of the month for what month?
I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't remember. But yeah, he had it, and that's my point. Is that people and Trayton, you're absolutely right. When Tony makes a mistake, when he throws an interception, it is front page. It is made big. They're still showing the botched extra point or field goal. I'm sorry, against Seattle from 2006. They're still showing.
Why are they showing it?
Because
he's
a Dallas Cowboy. That's why.
You don't think they'd be showing that if he had won a Super Bowl ranking, do you? You don't think that would – no, you don't think that would change anything?
When he wins a Super Bowl, they'll still show it because he's a Dallas Cowboy.
Okay.
They talk about the fact that that was his first year as a starter. They don't talk about the fact that he took over a 3-3 team from Drew Bledsoe. They don't talk about the fact that he was an undrafted free agent. You know, they talk about the botched, which really, like, that we count as a quarterback mistake because he bobbled a slick snap for a field goal, and that we count in and say this is the type of quarterback he is? Are you kidding me? Come on.
My
point is they're still showing it. They're still talking about it. When they talk about Tony Romo and the inability to close, they bring that up too. You talk about the Giant game in 07 where he threw an interception. Well, he was about to get sacked because the Giants and Strahan was in his grill all game. The same defense that was in Tom Brady's grill all game, in Brett Favre's grill all game. But for some reason, Tony Romo throws that interception, which was forced by the pressure, and he's a choker. Come on, guys.
So the only reason why he has this connotation since 2006, he hasn't won the one playoff game. It's really that simple. I mean, we can sit here and
teams win, quarterbacks play.
That's cool if you think that's the case. The fact of the matter is, when you go to the Hall of Fame, it's your legacy as your quarterback. I'm sorry, it's your legacy as a quarterback when it comes to winning. If you don't think that's anything to do with it, then I'm sorry, I don't know what kind of NFL you've been watching or if you've actually went to the Canton Hall of Fame, because let me tell you something, Terry Bradshaw didn't have great football stats by any means. No, he did not. He was a 47% completion percentage pass. But you know why he got a Super Bowl, or you know why he actually got to the Hall of Fame like many other quarterbacks? It's because, fact of the matter is, his team won. And yes, I'll preface the word team.
Wait,
but fact of the matter is,
his team won.
You know what? But you know what? But you know, guess what the Hall of Fame is? Hold on, wait. Guess what the Hall of Fame is?
One. That's what you said.
Guess what the Hall of Fame is?
In the Hall of Fame. And let me ask you a question, Mr. Pittsburgh Steeler. How many of those Steelers from the 70s that won four Super Bowls are in the Hall of Fame? How many?
Quite a bit.
Oh, but we're going to sit here and talk about Tony Romo can't do this and Tony Romo can't do that, but teams win. Terry Bradshaw, out of his own mouth, said in his best day he's not the quarterback Tony Romo is. He said that.
Ooh. That's ridiculous. Troy Aikman said something similar to that effect, didn't he? And that was ridiculous as well.
Guys who do watch the same NFL that I watch, and I was in the Canton Hall of Fame with you, Mr. K-Star, so I've been there just like you. We were there at the same time, okay? And so these guys that play the game understand that quarterbacks – play. They have a job to do. Yes, they lead, but they have a job to do. But teams win and teams lose. And the quarterback gets unfair credit when they win and unfair blame when they lose. But when you look
but
at
it's
talent,
part of the job description. Sorry if you don't like it. It's part of it. It's part of the legacy, is it not?
When you look at talent, you cannot discount the production that Tony Romo brings. And it is unfortunate for him and for Cowboy Nation that for the bulk of his career, he played for an inept, underachieving head coach who should have been fired, actually, in my opinion, should have never even been on that team, was a poor hire. And I said it on this show. I don't like it. I don't approve of it. I don't understand. I said it. You can go back in the archives and find out. When they hired Wade Phillips, I was against it 100%. You are coaching America's team. You are coaching a team that has 5 Super Bowl wins and 8 Super Bowl appearances. The only other team with 8 now is the Steelers, and that's now. Okay? And you bring in a guy who hasn't even coached a team to a Super Bowl, and you give him the reins. I mean, that's like taking someone who rides a bicycle and they just get their driver's license and you buy them a Corvette. And you say, here you go, buddy. Good luck.
So what made Jason Garrett so deserving of the job then under those circumstances?
Jason Garrett, when you look at who was available, Fisher wasn't coming to Dallas because these guys want more power than Jerry Jones is going to give them because he's a general manager and that's just the way it is. Cowher wasn't coming to Dallas. And who else was left? Those two were the only ones on the market that had any decent pedigree that you would look at and say, yep, these are guys that are proven and I want to turn over the team. Jason Garrett is a product of Dallas. Did he have a lot of coaching in his background? Not as much as I would have liked. But is he not a product of the Cowboys system? Cowboy, he coached under Parcells. He coached under he was quarterback coach. There was another good coach he coached under. I can't remember who it is now. But he has assistant coached under some very talented coaches. And I'm okay with him getting an opportunity. And I think this year he's going to show what he's capable of. But you can't discount the fact that, you know, look at Norv Turner. Look at Norv Turner. What has Norv Turner done in this league? As an offensive coordinator, one of the best ever. As a head coach, let's look at San Diego. And let's look at that team. Arguably, they every year have a talented team. What happens in San Diego? year after year after year. You're going to say that.
They have the same problem. No. They have the same problem. No, Philip Rivers is underachieving. There's no way. Philip Rivers is also – Philip Rivers is the AFC version of Tony Romo as far as I'm concerned. He's an underachiever. He has to do with
– And he's an offensive coach. And it has nothing to do with North Turner, right? It's all Philip Rivers' fault.
He had Marty Shortner. They went to the playoffs many a year, and they still always underachieved. And the fact of the matter is Philip Rivers did the same thing. He's the AFC version of Tony Romo, and that's fine. He's a good fantasy football quarterback. Don't get me wrong. I'd like to leave my fantasy football quarterback team. But the fact of the matter is it's not producing wins. It's not producing playoff appearances. It's not happening.
Well, just remember that a quarterback is not a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And a pitcher can go out there and win the game. A quarterback has a role, and he is the leader, but he has a role. And there's not a quarterback out there that's going to win the game on their own. Not Romo, not Phillip Rivers, not Tim Tebow, and not even your boy Ben Roethlisberger.
I can tell you this: Peyton Manning from 3-13 and 13-3, and for a decade had 12-4 football teams every year, and they were not that talented. He made them look much better than they were, and he was clutch in the regular season. I mean, if you want to give them the credit, you got to give them the blame. The fact of the matter is, there are many quarterbacks out there who have done it, who are in the playoffs every year. Tom Brady has an awful defense year after year after year. He's in the playoffs every year. Why is that?
And you're going to say that Eli Manning is better than Peyton? He's got two Super Bowls, and Eli's got one. I mean,
no,
Peyton's got
because
one.
It's because Peyton, the thing is, Eli or Peyton's always in the playoffs. Peyton has a career body of work. He's a winner. His win percentage is very high. It's higher than Eli. Eli is actually 58% win percentage.
Now, because it doesn't back your argument, the body of work, now it does or doesn't matter? Because now
– I just said it did. I just said the body of work matters. The body of work's the only thing that matters. If you're not winning, what difference does it make where you don't fear your team?
So then Eli is a better quarterback than his brother then because he's got two Super Bowls.
No, because Eli's made the playoffs once every 4 years. You're not listening to what I'm saying. You hear the words, but you're not listening clearly. I'm saying the whole body of work, not just one bit, not just another bit, the whole body of work. Year
to
year, regular
season.
The whole
body of work you took, I mean, you really adamant about taking out the one bit of Tony Romo messing up two games.
I'm not talking about 1 year. This is since 2006. The same story since 2006. I'm tired of hearing the same story about Tony Romo just underachieving in big games. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of him going into Minnesota and throwing a speaker and throwing three offensive points. If you want to bring him stats, three offensive points against the Minnesota Vikings. I'm tired of it. I want him to win just so it stops. This is annoying. She has Philip Rivers. It doesn't make any sense. But the fact of the matter is they underperform in very big games. I'm trying to figure out why.
You mean like the Steelers did last year against Tim Tebow and the Broncos underperformed in a big game?
Ben didn't underperform at all. Our defense let us down. You could look at the stats. See, the thing is, we give benefit to Ben of the doubt because he's actually been what we call a winner, unlike your boy Romo, who's been a loser his whole career.
Hey,
so when you get the benefit of the doubt when you do it.
And where was Ben drafted? Should he not be a winner? Where was he drafted?
What difference does it make?
First round? What pick?
He was the 11th overall. What difference does it make?
Oh, it doesn't make a difference.
Tom Brady was in a sixth-round pick. Who cares?
Tony Romo was undrafted free agent. And we're sitting here having this conversation with a guy who has the statistics, which is part of the game, that are irrefutable to show that there is talent. What he doesn't have, what he
we
hasn't
agree there's
had,
talent.
At the same time, he hasn't had the talent and the coaching. He needs both. Just like your boy Roethlisberger has had. He had talent and coaching, just like Eli Mad had talent and coaching. Okay? Romo has not had. When he has it and he doesn't win, I'm going to shut my mouth. But he has not had that.
How are we going to know when he has it? When is he going to have it then? Because they not have when they went 13-3 and they had a really good defense that year and T.O. and all that going on? Like, when? Okay, so when was he going to have it? When he conveniently wins? Like, what? I don't understand. When will he have this talent, this talent? I mean, is Jason Garrett not the guy? Is that what you're saying?
Of work. You just said body of work, right? I'm going to ask you again. Do you want Wade Phillips coaching the Steelers?
Hell no.
Okay. So, yeah, he put together one season at 13-3. Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl. He was a crappy head coach. Okay?
That's very true.
A Super Bowl, all right?
Yeah,
so what I'm saying is, right, that's what I'm saying. So because Wade Phillips had a talented team, was able to get 13-3, doesn't make him a good coach. He was a crappy head coach. And that team was not doomed to be successful. I wish on God's green earth that Parcells had stayed around two or three more years. We wouldn't be having this conversation. Unfortunately,
I wish he had, too.
We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Maybe he didn't feel Romo was a special enough player to keep him there. Who knows?
Oh, but he was bust enough to put him as starter over his guy, the guy that he brought to Dallas, who was his head coach in a Super Bowl for the Patriots. But he's not. So he put this undrafted free agent in as a starter over his guy he brought in, who took him to a Super Bowl with the Patriots, but he didn't think Romo was a special enough guy. Come on, man.
He didn't stick around.
And he never coached again. So if he went to another team, all right, maybe. But he never coached again.
No.
So maybe he was. Anyway, Train, any final words? We've taken up enough airtime. Any final words?
And my only final words is just two things. One to do with football and one not to do with football. But to do with football, I did get a chance to go to the Bears training camp. It's always a fun experience. Wish I'd have got there a little earlier to see more from where I was standing. I couldn't see a whole lot of the 2-minute drills they were running. I got a chance to see like the last hour. See some players up close, shook the hands of Rashid Davis. Whether he makes the team or not, it was still cool. Saw quite a few of the players up close. And mind you, Roberto Garza is a pretty big dude. And Peppers, he's like a tower. But that was an awesome experience. And second, man, you know, since I graduated, I had a chance to spend a lot of time with my family, and it has been awesome. So I just want to say, dude, I love football and I love my family.
All right, K-Star, any final words?
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to the rest of the preseason. I mean, you know, it's just the preseason, but the fact of the matter is it's a taste of football, and that has us so amped up in August. We didn't have this last year, you know, this going on right before, you know, right in the middle of the preseason or right at the beginning of the preseason. And, you know, like I said, time will tell. At the end of the day, time will tell the story. But I'm really excited to find out what the story or how the story's going to be told and, you know, what's next in the chapter of Romo, of the Eagles, you know, of Manning. It's going to be awesome.
All right. All right. Thank you, guys. I'm going to mute you both, but I'm going to have a couple words, and then we're going to sign off. But I want to, first and foremost, thank Dr. Train and thank K-Star for, you know, everything that they do to help make the Madden Voice great. And I want to also warn K-Star that we will be seeing those Steelers this year. That's all I'm saying. But with that said, we are excited to be back to Madden Voice. We have great things planned this year. No more breaks. We'll be doing a show minimum of every other week. And when the season starts, it'll be every week, definitely. But between now and the start of the season, we won't skip more than 1 week of we might even just roll every week. We'll see how schedules, and we are still in summer here. So, you know, we'll play it by ear. But you guys are back. We're back. The Madden Voice is back. Big things are coming. I am going to be on the Madden Voice .com, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, starting a new feature, video blog, where I will talk for a minute or two or three about whatever hot topic is out there, and I think it'll give you a preview of what you're going to hear on the show. So I hope it's something that everybody likes. It'll be a YouTube special. We'll put it on the website and Facebook and what have you. So you'll be able to see it. And we've just got some other things that we plan to do. So just stay tuned to the Madden Voice. We are going to offer you the best in NFL talk with a little twist, because you know what? I'm not a sports writer. You know, neither is Train and neither is K-Star. We're fans just like you guys, but we know our football. So for Dr. Train, for K-Star, and for all you guys out there in podcast land listening to us, we want to thank you for listening to the Madden Voice. And remember, ultimately, when you listen to the Madden Voice, remember this. As in the NFL, all feuds are ultimately settled on the field. Everybody take care.